This week's episode of Heavy Meta is brought to you by Face to Face Games.
No. Ladies and gentlemen. For what?
Welcome to Heavy Meta, your source for magic news, entertainment, and comedy.
What is up, cocksuckers? I'm Kevin Nettle.
And I'm Tristan Gregson, and tonight on Heavy Meta, we actually have maybe some topics. We'll see how it goes. Should draws be worth 0 points? We're late to the game on this, but who knows? Puka Trade, should you have your shit on there anymore? Is it a real business? Wizards is trying to control the amount of data that comes out of MTGO once again. Is that a problem? Should we even fucking care? We had a modern banned list update. How does that affect you moving forward? We're going to talk about Cube for sure, and not just because I'm here tonight. And who knows, maybe we'll even talk about Shadows of Innistrad. Of course, I think I'm the only one on the cast tonight who actually played in the pre-release, so we might not talk about that. There are plenty of other podcasts for that. But we do have somebody very special with us, one of my favorite people on the planet, for sure, in the top 0.01% easily. JR, the Time Elemental. How are you doing tonight, JR?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you. Thanks. I've been on a few times, but never with the man, TSG.
Wow. Well, I can't say enough about JR. He is spectacular. I have spoke of his legends at events we have been at past, and he is one of my favorite people to listen to on the underrated, mildly underrated, unless you're talking to certain other people in the community, Money Draft, the podcast. Where's it been recently? I feel like I've been looking for it, and I haven't seen it.
Same thing that's going on all over, man. It's just people are busy and
schedules and lives.
Like, you guys were saying the same thing. Like, you shouldn't read that as like, oh, they're winding down the cast. It's just like, in our minds, the cast is still going the same as ever. It's just
right. You know, well, your cast had a baby, busy. So I understand that that's a big deal. When your cast has a baby.
Hey, so did mine.
Yeah.
And by mine, I mean this one.
So, 4 months down the road, we're effectively back to... I mean, if we really want to fucking split hairs here, the guy that actually had a baby, he's the one who's here every fucking week. Meanwhile, the ones that don't have kids... Or, sorry, well, they all have kids. I'm the only one who doesn't have kids. I'm also here. Whatever. You get the idea.
That's my life, too.
Film school, man. You went to film school.
I did go to film school. So one day, I may be able to reach out.
Speaking of which, quick thing here. That's one thing I've actually talked to quite a bit about to my wife recently. Not film school, for God's sakes, but
it's like when Homer wanted to go to clown college.
Yeah,
you're just like sitting at dinner with your wife, and you stand up and you're like, "I'm going to film school."
Exactly. we've talked a bit lately about. I believe I might go back to school in the fall this year. So it's something I've been wanting to do for quite a while, and it's work has always kind of stood in the way. And now that I get off a lot earlier, I mean, of course, I'm not going to be going full time, but now that I get off quicker, I actually have the time to be able to go back to school.
More time for studying. Yeah, that does happen as you. You would think it would work in the opposite. As you're younger, you get off quicker, and then you have more time to study. But no. No, actually, as you age, you somehow end up with that opportunity. Well, that's awesome. Kind of a spoiler. Heavy Meta trying to educate yourselves.
Getting all edgy.
We can't all be. Yeah. I mean, thankfully, we have the professor, JR, here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, would you go to film school, Kevy?
No.
I'm guessing not.
Not going to film school.
He wants a real degree so he can get a real job.
A good portion of it, like I'm stoked about my job. My career path is set as far as I'm concerned. Like, this railroad retirement is the shit. But it's more just personal satisfaction. Like, I'm mad that I didn't get a degree when I was younger. I didn't care when I was younger because I was busy like playing rock and roll, drinking, and having sex. It seemed like a lot more important than getting a degree. But now, you know, that I'm older, I'm like, fuck, man, it seems like just such a waste of my fucking brain to not. And so the majority of it is wanting to just do it for myself. And I mean, of course, it's not going to be like, it's not like it's going to be a black mark on my record to go get a degree. You know, it always helps in advancement and shit like that in the company. Yeah. If I end up, yeah. If we end up finding
like a specific, if there's like a specific hurdle where like, you know, like, you know, you need like a, you need a degree for this or.
Right.
But yeah, definitely, I'd be like a little bit wary though. You don't want to just end up, you know, blowing $20,000 for, you know, like it is good to like feel good, but. Like
right.
A lot of people feel good about their degrees and they're, you know, they're like $100,000 in debt. Or,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as far as that goes, like for me, that there's the only degree, like, and it, for the most part, it just, it be going to the community college here, Saracoso. But the only like degree programs they have that in any way would like reflect on my current career, is like an associate's in welding science, which I mean, yeah, that can help out. The classes involved and things can help out. But, when it comes to that, like there's like actual welding schools that my company is willing to send me to.
Right.
So like, I don't even think I'm going to go that direction with it. Like, I don't know. I'm looking at a few different things, like off the wall thing, like art history right now. things like
you got a lot of time with general education before you got to really commit to something.
Exactly.
And as we all know, all college, especially math courses, start with the classic, if two trains leave at a certain station at a certain time, will they collide on Tevye's track line?
See?
Which,
they're it's a trick question. They're not going to collide because if Tevye worked on it, neither one of them are even going to make it to each
other. Boom, you passed the class. Time for Railroad Physics 102, son.
Would you want to do something like music editing or something?
Oh.
Whatever
that's
the proper name for that is. Sound mixing?
Yeah.
Audio engineering is what they try to polish that one as.
And that's kind of like they do have, I mean, at least, of course, I got to go through the general ed and stuff like that. And then who knows where I'll be when I get through doing that. But yeah, that's another big thing that like I think would have a big impact on me, like as far as like, you know, of course, not my career, but like my personal life or like a side career thing is exactly that, music and art. I think are, you know, I'm a big fucking history fan too. History might be something, depending on where I don't know. There's a lot of unforeseens, but at this point, I'm excited about it, and my wife is more than excited about it. So it's cool because she's kind of pushing me. Like at those times when I kind of, I know how I am. And if I'm like, oh, yeah, I've got this great idea. I want to do this. And then I start to just kind of trail off on it. If I don't have that, like, motivation from her, like, then I probably will drop it at some point.
That's secret shaming.
Yeah, exactly. But she's just all, come on, motherfucker, let's go. Let's do this. And then I'll do it. So.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be a quick side note, so we don't want to go too deep into that.
No, but before we even, I had an idea actually for TSG, and it came up last episode. Kevin was saying like, oh, we should have an event in LA at some point, you know, and TSG didn't say anything. 2 minutes later, it was like, oh, you know what, Vegas, let's talk about Vegas, which is cool, but. Like I personally would love an LA event because I just want to visit LA. I've never been, and
I think we should do.
I know it's going to be way more. I know it's going to be decrepit and not that nice, but that's my thing. And that's
my
idea.
Yeah,
decrepit like, and not nice is your thing. All right,
Well, not just, but it's a mod. Like there are buildings there that are modern and also already decrepit. You like, and you look at them, and it's like, oh, it's a really modern building, and you know, it was made in like the '60s and '70s, and like, yeah, it's but it's like already kind of decrepit. Yeah, and just that was my idea for TSG, a photo book of modern decrepit LA, and it probably has been done before. It almost sounds too obvious, but that was my idea.
That'd be kind of
to look into
like table book?
Popular and unpopular architecture of the area.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the other thing. I wanted to, like, walk around, and they had these sweet old theaters there. And you don't even have any theaters like that in New York. And had these weird themes like the Egyptian and the Mayan, and they had all this elaborate fake, you know, Egyptian and Mayan stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And even in, like, the 20s and 30s, and you don't even have that kind of stuff in New York, so. Just like to visit L.A. and just basically walk around and have a – not a vision quest, maybe, but
not a, I would like, not a well, Dodger, well, maybe.
Dodger Stadium fits right into that. Like, it's my favorite stadium in the majors now because it fits into that modern but slightly in decline aesthetic. I mean, it's the third. I think it's the third oldest stadium in the major leagues now.
Oh wow, I didn't realize that. Man, you are a fucking hell of knowledge.
I mean. When I was growing up, it was like, you know, I'm old enough, and probably we all are, that it was kind of like right there in the middle, kind of, you know, of like older stadiums. But
yeah.
That's my.
No, I think JR sure and I are just on like different audio wavelengths.
I'm sure it's costly to produce a photo book.
Yeah,
so. The publication is the hardest part. I feel like that's the only part.
Yeah,
of stuff.
Probably the thing you would want to do would be to look at like the Amazon bestseller, you know, photography book list and work backwards. You know, that's a good artist method there. Just look at the rankings and work backwards and find something that people will like.
I mean, the nice thing about Southern California in general is it was just built out in such a different fashion than so much of the rest of the United States. That it does have a very unique look and feel to it, and it's so vast, and there's so much to it, and it's not affected by the winter weathers at all. Like, the things just age differently, things just look differently. It's really so different over there. Well, I'm late to the party on this subject, but I heard a lot of chatter at the pre-release about this whole concept of doing away with the draw, which I've heard about before in Magic. Now, it's a bigger concept, it's a bigger topic, but I was wanting to know if you guys have, you know, you guys don't play a ton of competitive Magic, but you've drawn matches. You've played in matches where you have drawn.
Right.
Do you feel like losing the point you get from the draw, and again, you've probably drawn more unintentionally than intentionally in your Magic playing career.
Yeah.
Do you feel like losing the point on the draw is a big deal? Is the 55, 60 minutes you put into a round of Magic worth that 1 point in standings that you would play for? And would losing that for the sense of a truly competitive win-lose is what matters tournament environment be worth it or not worth it to you?
I think if I played control decks, sure, you know, I think that's my answer. But
yeah, I think that's kind of how it goes. Is like if you're kind of trying to use it to an advantage in that sense.
But
then
that
of course,
said,
you know,
philosophically, no. I mean, I guess that would have to come down on 0 points for a tie.
Yeah. I guess that just discourages people from trying to use that as an advantage.
No, I'm just trying to boil down the conversation that's been had, you know, outside of articles that have been posted recently. You know, again, there is a club that, you know, is spoken or unspoken about players that are at all of these tournaments and how they treat each other and how they, you know, look out for each other. Just, you know, it's not even necessarily a team. It's people you know and kind of the concept of the scratch my back, I'll scratch yours next time thing. And it's not just about who concedes to who in the right spot, but also has to do with when draws take place for events and how that's going to position people in events. And then you can transition that into, you know, Pro Tour viewership and how in the last couple of rounds of a Pro Tour, all of a sudden the matches you're watching have nothing to do with the players you're going to be watching the next day on Sunday. So to me, the conversation really boils down to one basic thing. You know, are the players that are genuinely fighting to win a match, that are going to time, trying to win, and then end up with nothing, are they outweighed by the far more common event, which is people that intentionally draw to who assist their position in a tournament solely and not actually play the game of Magic, whether or not they are part of the same team or they are friends or they are looking for some compensation
just
from one person or another.
Well,
and as a spectator, and now go ahead, Jared.
I've been following the thread closely because it sort of irritated me, but you just have a cutoff. I'm sure some, like, you know, before round X, you get 1 point. After round X, no points, right? So that way,
there's less
angling, but early on.
I think that's a good solution to it, because, I mean, there's the fact that, you know, it's, what is it, at what point do they, when they cut and they go to best fucking 3 out of 5 instead of 2 out of 3 as far as the matches go, it's kind of the same concept there. You know, at some point, you know, whatever, like you said, after fucking round X or after day one, you know, if you basically let the draw count for a point on day one and don't on day two kind of thing, I guess that kind of makes for more. And as long as everybody's playing around the same rule, I don't see there being an issue with it. And I think that leads to better games of Magic.
I think
it also kind of discourages
an event.
What's that?
It discourages what?
Again, I haven't followed it, but I think it also probably discourages, like, Lantern decks and that kind of thing, decks that inherently people don't like to play against and have exist.
Yeah.
And is that, and, you know, ultimately, is that a positive for the game of Magic the Gathering, do you feel?
Sure. I mean, control is having its issues in modern, but that could be addressed in probably better ways than. I think it's a good idea. What irritated me is, like, a lot of stuff irritates me. Like, these mid level pros always. It seems like a recent trend lately where these mid level pros try to play like thought leader, like rules thought leader, like two or three, like, you know, a year or two to advance, like all the time now. Like, someone's always, like, someone floated the idea of, like, Viseer Seer being banned. Like, I hope that was a joke. It must have been a joke, right? Like, you know.
I don't know. I never read anything, so I'm not as privy to these attempts to kind of move the sheep that are content consumers. You know, it doesn't surprise me, and I'm not really necessarily frustrated by the people that try to do this, because they do play a fuck ton of Magic. And at some point, you just get a whole new level of entitlement where you just kind of feel like, hey, you know, I'm going out there and I'm playing these games every weekend. I'm trying to, you know, whatever kind of tiny margin of profit you can get out of it. They think that their viewpoints should be taken considerably more seriously than other players, based on experience or based on knowledge or some combination of that thing. And the concepts of concession make sense.
I agree. But, of course, it comes off to the average player as, like, I feel that I'm so good that I'm, you know, entitled to this. And, like, maybe you are. Like, maybe, like, you know, you put in that sort of work and you've been in the community, been, you know, member of the community for this many years. And or it's more that you've earned it in terms of your, you know, game acumen. But, you know, I think that's sort of like what comes off a little bit, and, you know, or like people perceive as negative. But I don't know. I wasn't even referring to F. Rose article from a few weeks ago now. It's more and more recent stuff where it just seems like everyone's just trying to. It's one thing to, like, go, you know, when a card is spoiled, just, like, start shitting out Bruce, you know, on Twitter. But it seems like a more recent trend where, like, everyone's trying to be, like, you know, rule, format, ban, hammer, thought leader. But the conversation
interesting. Like,
there's much more stuff on Twitter.
No, it's interesting to me because I'm purposely trying to not be part of these conversations. And it's funny to me that guys that are so guarded about kind of sharing a lot of information and how there's public perception for them would come out and be so kind of forward about their feelings in terms of how they should be treated at a tournament. I think it's very surprising to me to hear someone like Ifro would write an article like that and say those kind of things. That's very kind of surprising to me. And I don't know, but I can confirm that those things exist. I mean, players have that kind of built-in camaraderie, and the players that go to that many events are going to have a disposition to one another, and it's going to carry over into other events. And it's extremely frustrating for the people that don't have that kind of social circle or group of friends or all these assets that they can kind of get pushed out because they're not familiar with how a system works and the expectations of them in a moment. When you're just a random person that showed up to a Grand Prix and is in a position to maybe place very, very well for the first time, or you just enjoy playing Magic and want to do it, and then someone is making you feel like they need to, you know, you need to do them a favor.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Although, man, in Eric's defense, like, his argument was really that the person who doesn't draw, like, that's not the optimal decision overall, right? Because their position is more or less the same, you know, and you're just helping someone out. So he thought he was making more of like a Pareto optimal decision kind of argument. That's what I was like. It came off as that.
I didn't read it. The only reason it even got on my radar is because so many people had been talking about it and had such strong opinions about it. To me, I really feel for the players that are more casual and truly get into those situations where they end up with the unintentional draw and have to try to find a way to kind of navigate that situation. So for me, it's almost like a necessary evil we have to live with right now, when obviously in terms of competitive play, the vast majority of these draws, especially later in the stage of a tournament, are going to be intentional, and they're going to be with the intent to have a position in a tournament and not about the way a game played out. So to me,
right,
that's still kind of frustrating. Yeah.
I was just remembering, it wasn't that long ago when I came back to the game, first time I was like in a tournament, and someone was like, "What are your breakers like?" And I was like, "What? What the fuck are you talking about? What are my breakers like?"
Yo, I've never breakdanced once in my life.
What are your breakers like? That's something that's like, if you're just getting into the game, is so,
yeah,
so foreign, right?
Yeah, it's got to be hard to kind of deal with and navigate. Like, I don't pay much attention to that shit anyway. I mean, I get it. I know where the breakers and stuff, or like how the breakers affect your standings, but like, to an extent, I still, like, if I were for some reason like playing or placing well in a large event, I'd probably have to come get one of you guys and be like, wait, so yeah, break this down for me.
This is like such a high level conversation. This is really a conversation that people who have been in the situation so many times have like mental shortcuts, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Just like...
Whereas, but how nice would it be if this game eliminated all of that and we just, I mean, like, not viewership, and talking about Magic in terms of the competitive semi-esport that it should really be striving to be, eliminating the draw would be so good for that. It would be so good that you could just go in every round, every event, knowing that you're going to get to see all these guys be fighting every single round. That would be so strong for the game.
Yeah, I think it is. Like, of course, you know, you do get into there's the other side of the coin where you get into the fact that, like, you know, if a game, you know, if it's a hard-fought fucking game and your game goes to fucking time and, you know, shit happens, or game goes to fucking turns and you can't, like, you can't finish it out and it was a hard-fought game and then you don't get any points out of it, that's got to get fucking frustrating too. You know, and as opposed to, like you're saying, you know, the intentional draw sort of thing. You know, you're like, fuck, man, I can't, you know, I've been grinding this game out for fucking an hour now. This is ridiculous. And then it's still, and you're like, oh, and I get nothing out of it. That's got to get frustrating. So that's why I think that, you know, where you're, like you said, most of your intentional draws are going to come later, you know, as far as like standings and placement goes. But it gives, you know, if you just say like day one, day two kind of thing, like a cutoff there, it gives your earlier, it gives you more of a fighting chance. You know, it might get you into day two because you had that draw as opposed to a loss, because you fought it out. And which those are good games of Magic too. It's always, you know, in any sport, any competition, it's always kind of a, a letdown and just a fucking flub when you have a well-thought-out game, match, fucking battle, whatever it might be, and then there's no clear winner in the end. I mean, we remember the days back in the day, the fucking, the NHL of four overtimes and nobody winning. Like, you know, it's shit like that that, like, it's anticlimactic. And so those are good games of Magic too, but to, I guess, give people an incentive, you know, earlier on, yeah, battle it out, fucking do what you have to do to try to get that extra point, because that point can matter. But then later on, you know, and as long as everybody, like I said, everybody's playing by the same rules of, oh shit, you know, on day two or whatever, then all of a sudden that goes away, and now you have to really battle it out. And I think that's the most balanced way to either keep or do away with it, is to make some sort of compromise.
Yeah, it sounds like JR has done plenty of reading on the exhaustive thread on this topic, so there's not a lot of new territory to cover. But I, for one, support the the vast majority of the game is being played in a space where those draws are intentional, and so much better for the viewership, the spectatorship of the game. I think that would be a strong move, and it would really shake things up. I just that small part of me is so, I feel so bad for those, especially newer players, that, you know, they just take more time to make decisions, and I don't want them to be punished for doing that. If we can eliminate that, and it sounds like, you know, that day two cutoff, that late in the tournament cutoff, to kind of change things there is sounds like a great solution.
Or what about just going straight up no
far?
Straight up no ties, like, fucking, that's it, there's no ties, like, fucking, when you're done, like, no draws, no ties, when you get to the end, then, you know, shootout of sorts.
First blood is often the way, yeah.
Yeah, like, go first blood, or fucking, change. Or fucking everybody fucking reshuffles their deck, and then fucking top five cards, most converted mana cost wins, whatever the fuck.
Well, that's random, you know, I have played in tournaments where that has been the outcome. You know, a lot of, like, nationals grinders and things like that, where you just, it's effectively single or double elimination. You have to have that kind of result. Mm-hmm. And all you're really doing is you're just transferring the feel bads. You're transferring the feel bads of two people that, again, spent 50 to 60 minutes trying to play for a win and not coming to that conclusion, and then boiling it down to, you used a fetch land, you're dead, I win now. Right. It's not a better solution, but it is a solution to prevent that. Allowing players to draw and just having to have zero value is possibly worse, because now you're immediately making it, there's going to be far more opportunities for players to try to covertly determine a winner in a random fashion, and that kind of things. So again, it's not a perfect system.
Right.
Yeah, just thinking about, like, if I were to, like, design a sport, from the beginning or a game, yeah, ties just invite collusion, like, no ties, you know? Because it's very easy for, you know, two teams, or they're going back and forth, and it's just, like, near the end, they're both just like, all right, well, let's just, like, take a tie, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the easiest way to, you know, well put.
You know, if that goes on for a while, you know, it could kind of creep, and you might have something else. But I had read Efro's article a while back, but the recent sort of kind of upsurge in this conversation I hadn't really followed. But I think we hit it. I mean, and if no one else said that, like, day one, day two idea, that, you know, that's crazy. Like, what are they even doing?
Yeah. What the hell's wrong?
Piggybacking on that, piggybacking on that concept of viewership and you know, Magic being a much more of a spectator sport these days, and how draws can affect it. I was also keyed in recently to this whole crowdfunding campaign to try to get GG's Live back at more events, and people being kind of put off by sticker shock on how expensive that kind of process is, which really surprised me. And once again, the conversation always seems to boil down to GP or event entry fee in general. What are we really paying for as prices continue to go up? Shouldn't these things already be built into our Grand Prix experience to make sure that it is indeed broadcast throughout all the internets, so we can have the kind of Magic content we're already getting from Star City Games every weekend across the Grand Prix circuit, or who knows, other things like the Super Sunday Series, which they cut out stuff on. Did you guys look at any of that at all? JR, apparently you're a Reddit lurker, and I did not know that.
Am I a Reddit lurker? What? Is someone masquerading as me?
No. I was just talking about how there was also this conversation recently about trying to crowdfund, GG's Live to pick up coverage on events that had been dropped, and the discussion that was happening there. I didn't know if you would follow that at all.
Oh no, but yeah. Well, is there a number? Do you know, like for a 2-day event, like what? Yeah, what's the number? How much does it cost?
How much do they want? I can go look it up. I didn't even actually click on their thing.
Okay. Well, either way,
let's come from your perspective. You're a money guy.
Pay for that. People should want to pay for that. People pay for all sorts of content. I think streaming of live events is should be higher up, you know, on the list of things that people should support. And so, yeah.
I get that. I mean, people do pay for content. So, you know, when you're talking in the Magic community, people pay for, you know, content based on the recent tournament that that we're talking, like whatever X tournament we're talking about crowdfunding to watch stream, people pay money for content like the week after that to see what, you know, somebody's insight was. I totally get that. But at the same time, I guess this, of course, coverage always parallels like pro sports and shit like that. Like, you know, it's this is a game we love. We like to be able to watch it, yet we don't have to pay fucking, NBC or fucking ESPN to broadcast the games. We got to sit through their commercials, which is how they generate revenue to do it, which is fine. I mean, you know, I guess to me, it hits a little more with that. Like, maybe if you need revenue to stream these events, to grow the game and to grow, you know, all these brands that are involved with the game, like you should be turning maybe to advertisers, shops and shit like that.
That's a very old conversation that I wish Wizards would pick back up. We've had many times where, why isn't the Pro Tour sponsored by Red Bull, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, rather than asking, asking everybody out there to, pay to watch you guys stream this event that, I'm not at, I might like to tune in and see what's going on and actually watch the event and see what's happening. But like to have me have to pay for it out of pocket to watch it, it's like, I pay for my internet. That to me, in a lot of ways, that should be enough. But like JR, you started off with a good point that kind of counters how I feel about it. And that's that we pay for content. I mean, I don't pay for content because I get my content from Twitter. But like, as a whole, this community, we pay for content that is at like such a smaller level. It's one pro or one semi pro or one just guy that might happen to be good
mostly
at writing articles.
Mostly just guys, really, in terms of YouTube views, but
right. And you'll pay for content and it's just analytical content of what may have happened over that tournament or about deck techs and shit like that or just their inside scoop on the way things went or just to watch them play Magic. You'll pay for that, but people do have a problem with paying for the streaming coverage. So it's like I definitely see valid points to both sides of it. I was more in the camp that fuck those guys if they can't get have corporate sponsors or at least game stores, like larger game stores and shit like that to sponsor their shit, then fuck them. I don't need to watch their coverage. But, you right off the bat brought up a good point. So I'm kind of on the fence now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not aware
I just want to know,
are you position is at all, but specifics of the proposition, but.
It's interesting. You say like we pay for so much content. This should be the kind of content we're paying for. The question I think a lot of the viewers or a lot of the players already have is they feel like they're already paying for it. They feel like it's kind of included in the Grand Prix entries, the money we pay to Wizards of the Coast to buy the product in the first place. This is part of their marketing budget. It was more of a sticker shock to them to be like, look, we already thought we were paying this system. You know, you told us in the last few years we were getting more and more coverage. Entry fees for events were going up, and that was being offset. And now you're telling me just for this one Grand Prix, GG's Lives wants $20,000 to cover it for GP Minneapolis.
I mean, I don't see anything implicit in buying a pack of cards or going to GP that it's going to be on TV. Like, that's like a super luxury. I mean, you know, you could argue that relative to other games, it should be. If it's really an event of that magnitude and you take your game seriously, it should be streamed somehow.
Right.
But in terms of, like, the customer experience, like, you know, you can't be mad. If you go to a GP and it's not streamed, like, who?
Like, oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, is there any sort of, like, precedent to that in, or to this in, you know, across the board, like, other, like, esports and other games? Like, you know, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, like, Magic being the game that it is and the intellectual property that Wizards has, like, is such a great game, such a rich game, yet it suffers immensely compared to all these other games out there, like Dota and shit like that. Like, they're large streamed events and shit that, you know, you've got fucking thousands of people there as spectators, and then they're streamed, and they've got hundreds of thousands of fucking viewers. And Magic, like, these, you know, even the pro tours are, like, pale in comparison as far as, like, Twitch viewers. I mean, I get there's a lot of inherent differences in, like, the actual viewing experience of the game because you're watching a slow card game as compared to, like, video game action. But, like, altogether, like, the esports realm, is there, like, any other, you know, is that what the other guys are doing? Is that what these other streams or these other big live stream Twitch events in other games are doing? Are they crowdfunding it, or are they using corporate sponsors or using their own fucking money to do it?
They are definitely using corporate money to make these events happen.
So I guess it goes back to, like you were saying before, TSG, is a conversation we've had quite a few times. That's something that they should look into doing, as opposed to asking the viewers for money. You know, this isn't, you know, for lack of a better term, like Scotty Mack's fucking Modern Mastery stream or whatever. Like, he's not a guy that wants to, you know, educate you on how to play Magic and, you know, could use some help funding-wise. This is, you know, a large-scale Magic tournament that doesn't have the money to stream it and is asking the viewers to. I don't know. To me, that's kind of...
Well, JR's angle here is very interesting because... If we're saying it's premium content, if we're going to go to that area, that really brings it to a different realm. It strips entitlement, which I really like, because so many Magic players have so much entitlement of all these things, and the vast, vast majority of Magic players just have no idea what life was like before every single event that they cared about was streamed. So it's kind of refreshing to hear that. You know, with that in mind, do you think some kind of, you know, like a UFC pay-per-view style model would work for them where, you know, you kind of have to pay to get what you want to get? Or,
I mean, I'm always the kind of guy, if you ask me if are micropayments going to work, I'm like, yeah, like, I'm always going to like say that, but no, like it just doesn't really take off a lot of the time. And I think the infrastructure doesn't exist. Like, it's kind of just a thing where, in practical terms, the infrastructure for that doesn't exist. If it did exist, like, yeah, they might do it. You know, if there was just like a, you know, if Twitch, I mean, it's a good, like, why, like, if Twitch had like some kind of money function, like, where you could actually just pay to watch on Twitch.
Right.
I assume it's just like against their philosophy. Like, they would think, like, if they had any of that percentage of action, that would just, like, sully their whole thing. And that must be why they don't do it, but...
Right.
I mean, like, they should do that. A little bit.
Makes sense, yeah, a little bit. Give it an option. You have free content, or you do a paywall, you know? Like, some people can do this shit for free, and you can watch it for free, and everything's great, and some streams you have to pay for.
It's like Pornhub. Like, there's some premium Pornhub, but you don't feel like you're not like using Pornhub, and you're like, oh man.
Yeah, like when you watch everything on the free Pornhub, then you know, and you need something new, maybe it's time to dip into the wallet. But there's something for everybody.
There's enough turnover there. where it's you're pretty good. It's
I do like nowadays. We have the perfect guy. We have the perfect guy on here to make some kind of porn allegory. You know, not to, to make too many assumptions about JR. But yeah, you know, if you want to watch people play shitty MTGO, you know, in their bedroom or, you know, with bad lighting, yeah, that could be on the free side.
Yeah.
If you want to pay for the premium, well lit, you know, the the people playing the game are clean kind of thing, then you can go ahead and of age, like you should be able to pay for that side of the product.
Yeah, but I like the other stuff is where the analogy breaks down. Well lit.
Sometimes
well
you can't account for personal preference.
Well lit porn, like that's not even like.
That's no fun.
I just can't even deal with that. Is there music? Like, if there's porn, if there's like music and porn, I'm just out. I'm just like,
yeah,
I can't watch this.
You live in the digital age. You'd think, JR, you think you'd be able to select your audio tracks on the high end stuff, right? You'd be able to select a soundtrack you wanted or no soundtrack.
Well.
Yeah, she'd walk over to the stereo. Yeah, she'd walk over to the stereo and be like, "What do you want to listen to, sweetie?" And then you just pick it, and she's just all okay. And then it just feeds right into the video. I like it. I like this idea.
Too much work, and I have many opinions on porn, but we don't talk
yet.
At the end of the day, you know, I really like that you're saying, you know, hey, we pay for so much else in Magic. Pony the fuck up. And pay for this. As a content creator myself and someone with a very worthless art degree that only gets paid when people that want to consume my shit for free feel like paying for it, it makes a lot of sense. And looking at that number and breaking down what $20,000 can get you for an event, yeah, if you're not doing it locally, you got to carry gear around, and then you got to do all that fucking Kickstarter back-end bullshit. Like, $20,000 does not account for the 10% they're going to take off the top, does not account for all the costs of all the dumb playmats you got to send people. It's actually quite a deal to get an entire team of people out there to do it. Plus, apparently you're going to hire Marshall and Ifro, and those guys are not cheap to show up at your birthday party. You better be able to pay them what they want to be paid to do an event.
Yeah.
They like Magic plenty, but not enough to pay the bills these days. So, you know, at the end of the day, but I'm the kind of guy, I could live without every single GP being covered. Like, I would be okay with that, but apparently that's not the case.
What? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And people, it's again, like people just got spoiled from just years of always having an event on Sunday. And even I still feel bad that there's not, I don't even like Legacy all that much, but it was nice when there was like a Legacy event almost every Sunday, you know, on TV, on the SCG.
Yeah,
for the last year of it or so, I didn't watch it at all, which is probably why I went away. But
they were tracking your viewership, and you're not there anymore.
Well, JR's fucking over it, so are we. Fucking out. Bye. No, I guess that kind of comes down to part of it too. Is like I don't watch very much coverage at all, but I do like having it. It was nice back when it was just there every fucking weekend, no matter what. So if I could find some time, sweet. I can, you know, just at the drop of a hat, throw the shit on and watch it and fucking hang out, do whatever. But I like would only do that every once in a great while. So I guess I'm not the right person to be talking about this.
We just kind of sound old and curmudgeon-y where it's kind of like, whatever, you know, like I pay a premium for my premium shit. You kids can't complain when your shit's not free all the time if you want to go out and fucking pay for it kind of thing. Which I'm fine with. To me, it all makes sense. It's like, yeah, go for it.
I pay a premium for my premium. I have no issues. Again, I didn't look at the exact numbers of the exact proposition they were putting up there, but, you know, in general, I don't. Lots of stuff annoys me way more than people ask. Even if you just like abjectly ask for money on Fund Me, GoFundMe, or whatever, like I'm not gonna fault you for that. Like,
yeah, because I guess
get pissed off about that.
It is what it is. Like you know, all you have to do is say like no thanks, I'm not going to fund you. You don't have to.
I get pissed off about other stuff way more than like someone who's just like, yeah, I'm like really down on my luck. Like I just want money to like play Magic and live. At least there's like no lie there. They're just like,
yeah,
hey man, like Like, you know. I should get a go.
You're saying
they're putting themselves out there so much, I can't even be mad. I'm just like, oh, I'm not.
I can't. You can't fault. No matter how stupid these people can be, you just can't. You can't fault them.
I should get a heavy metal goes to college fucking GoFundMe thing together.
Dumber things have been done, and I'm not saying that's a dumb thing.
Who knows what I could fucking accomplish there?
If it's like art history. I don't know. I might have to do something more.
Take JR off the donor list.
Yeah. Well, no, I guess like I could do different tiers. Be like, if I make this much, then I'll go after this major. If I make this much, I'll do this major. And who knows? I might be a doctor when this is done.
Just gonna parlay.
Well, we've thoroughly covered that and come out the other side looking like we're old men.
Yeah.
Although, again, to just completely just so smoothly roll through topics this evening, I'm glad once again we have JR here. JR is a smart man. He is a money man. He might be a math man. I don't want to make too many assumptions about him. But and also, you read a lot about Magic the Gathering.
He also doesn't like doesn't like art history.
Well, who actually?
No, I didn't say I don't like it. I'm just saying...
have you looked at all at the recent Puka trade shenanigans that have been being called on them on the internets recently?
I'm just aware of the general inflation and lack of upgrades, and I don't know if there was like a recent official post by the official guys.
You're up to speed then, because there's not exactly like new news. It's just more that like people are slowly catching on. Like I've known for years that their system is very volatile and that they can kind of make a lot of broad sweeping decisions to how they use their system, and you know, we as the user just have to sit there and watch and take it or whatever you want to call it. So to me, it's just more people are kind of calling that out and kind of coming up to speed with stuff. And now, JR, do you use Puka Trade at all?
I never have, no.
Never? Was, okay.
We talked about it way back, and it was just like, I've always been comfortable with Bylas, and I would just rather trade in and out of money than, people complain. There are a few things that people complain about. You know, the average user is not, might not be sophisticated enough to realize the difference between SP and near min, you know, that kind of thing. And there's like some like sharking involved in terms, not sharking, but you know, shipping high spread cards. Like what I would do, I would just like ship high spread cards and like take low spread cards so that even, you know, things are calibrated on a retail price. But, you know, if they had calibrated things on the, you know, buy list price, that would be more fair probably. But those are both kind of minor problems, I guess. I guess the inflation is the main problem. And that's, like, what I pointed out, like, months and months ago. And they even asked them about it when they were on Brainstorm Brewery, and they said all the right things. They were like, oh, we're doing the things to sort of calibrate that. And... you know, we need to pump more points into the system to keep things stable so that there's not deflation. But, you know, there's been inflation. I don't know what the, you know, Puka, it's gone down to like 60% of a dollar or something, right?
Well, okay, so I'm with you there. I've been following a lot of this stuff, but... for our audience, let's go over a lesson, because we're talking about inflation and deflation and how we're going to work with it. Let's talk to people like they've never taken an economics class. Let's say they're all 8 years old. Sure, if that's where you want to go. How does Puka Trade work? I don't get it. I have cards. I want points. Points become cards. Everything seems fine, right? What's the problem?
But then you start pumping all these artificial bonus points into the system. you know?
Which is bad because...
Which is bad because when you trade away cards for points, those points that you're holding are going to tend to depreciate. If you don't use them right away to get a card right away, and that's also part of the problem, you know, people are very aggressive, you know, quote-unquote sniping cards that are available, you know, and unless you're it's, you know, it's set up for casual users, but unless you're a non-casual user, it's hard to actually get the good cards that are out there.
I guess that's a big part of it, too. Like, it seemed to work really well in its earlier stages, you know, a couple years ago or whatever. When it got going, everybody was all hype on the system. Everybody liked it because it worked out, like, in its idealistic phase, it worked out great. You know, you could...
Well, Puka Trade is absolutely perfect for mildly lazy players who want awful cards and are too lazy to just buy them.
Right.
Like, that is really what the system is set up for. It's like, right. I need a 6th edition Eternal Champion, and you need a revised edition Personal Incarnation... We can make this transaction.
Well, that's the thing is, it's one of those, like, you didn't have to, it's like, well, I need this, you know, as opposed to just, like, you know, sitting down with your trade binder and somebody else's trade binder. It's like, oh, I need this, and you need this, and we don't have what each other needs, you know. But
as long as those needs are just garbage.
Right.
Because as soon as competitive players got into it and need the premier standard, you know, we needed the premier tournament cards.
Right.
That's where this sniping concept came in. This is where this market deflation or inflation based on which direction it's going, it became a problem.
Right.
Because you started to get the players that needed it for profit. And then a whole another slew of problems came out of that. It's completely separate from the way that the economy is crashing. But what were you about to say, JR?
Also the banning problem, which would again be corrected if they just based it on buy list prices, but, you know, when a card spikes and someone, like, ships it for value.
Yeah, I don't think at this point that's going to save them, and I don't think that's their biggest problem.
Oh, no, you know, I'm just saying.
I can say the first time I ever heard of Puka Trade was probably 3.5 years ago at this point, and they had approached me out of the blue to make content endorsing their website, and their snap form of payment was to offer me points. And as soon as that was what was put on the table, I was like, well, this is ridiculous. Your system is it's a sham. I mean, you're already, you're paying me in other people's Magic cards and trying to get me to tell them that they need to put more into it. And you're creating something out of thin air. So, it's super awkward because I like Eric. I like the founder. You know, he's in Oakland. I'm still in Oakland. I've hung out with them before, played Magic at their old office before with some of their former employees. They've gone through a lot of changes recently. And it's awkward because at the end of the day, even if he has, you know, the best intentions for the system, he still needs to make this his business and make it profitable, which means he's got to charge people for it and they've got to get some kind of extra premium thing out of it. Which is already frustrating to me because I think that what made this process great was the exact kind of transaction I lined up already. And that's completely separate of the whole, like, okay, well, I'm going to pay for promotion with other people's Magic cards. That's just not right. I don't like that at all. And I've been fairly indifferent to it for the last long period of time because, you know, you guys have had them on the show before I was here. You know, Maddie did a whole episode on Puka Trade because he was so excited about the prospect of being able to move all that kind of stuff because he's, you know, very motivated by doing bad inventory and then trying to turn it into something useful.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we've got all these problems. And as JR lined out earlier, you know, there is inflation because cards are always entering the system. People are always posting new cards and then points are being used to move those cards around, and you've got all these points that you then can't get the cards you really want with them. Now, in previous conversations, you know, when Brainstorm Brewery tried to have on Puka Trade to really ask them the nitty-gritty, the hard questions, the, you know, this isn't a pyramid scheme kind of things, they did, as JR said, you know, deflect them really well, answer them really well, and they tried to go the opposite route, saying there was deflation of the value. The points keep leaving the system. That the cards keep leaving the system. Thusly, points keep leaving the system. And you keep putting points into it, and that's why they have all these bonus opportunities, all these ways that you can verify your email, and you get, you know, $2 worth of Magic cards, and right. so on and so forth. And it doesn't take an economics major to realize that all of those incentive things that they're offering you is still just paying you with other people's cards. Like, you know, the willingness right. to have those things go through their system is no accountability for them whatsoever. It's purely based on other users to have to do it. And then again, they pay out other people in the same currency. And heaven forbid, you know, if I didn't know Eric and I didn't know these guys well enough, I would definitely be sitting here accusing them of, well, hey, you know, if it starts to go south like this, you just, as the guys in charge, scoop up every valuable card out on the market there because you have infinite points, and then shut it down for whatever reason. Like, there's right. just zero accountability. Same with any of these crowdfunding campaigns. To get more specifically, which is what spawned this conversation last week, which is that people had given them $60,000 to implement a lot of stuff that, you know, Maddie and you were super jazzed about this time last year,
yeah.
about bringing an MTGO conversion. And I, you know, you can go back in the catalog. I have said that that would never happen. It would never work. And, right. and here we are today. And
it hasn't happened. And it, yeah, from the looks of things.
It's so frustrating to me. For so many people I know, and even the people I don't know, I feel so bad that they put money into this, and then odds are they're not going to be able to get anything out of it.
Right. Yeah, because what happens when, you know, when the thing does just collapse and all of the cards you've traded away for points to, you know, because, you know, you've seen people that on Twitter that have like, yeah, you know, I'm getting rid of this, getting rid of that, getting rid of this. I'm saving up for those bigger things. And, you know, apparently occasionally you'll see like, oh, this got traded on Puka Trader, like, you know, a high dollar card, you know, fucking, you know, dual lands and shit like that. And
that's the thing that says for a while, like if you're like $50 in, $50 out, that's fine. It's probably fine. Or $100 in, $100 out. But the people who are just like stacking up these points, like it's money. It's no good.
Yeah, because then when the system folds, or even like it doesn't even take the system completely folding, but you know when you've got
inflation,
you've got thousands of dollars worth of Puka points sitting there, and like you guys said, like at this point, you know it's so hard to even find the good cards on there. Like people are always looking for those good cards and can't find them, and you know it causes the issue there. You're like, yeah, oh man, I was just saving up to get my power on Puka Trade. I was getting rid of all this crap that I have, and I'm gonna buy power with my Puka points, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, now all that is available on there is a bunch of crap that I got rid of. You know,
yeah, and it's funny because they make such a big deal every time. You know, for a while there, they were having all these milestones where it's like, oh, you know, our first Underground Sea was traded, our first Tabernacle was traded, our first Factory was traded, our first Mox was traded, our first Lotus was traded. And a lot of those people and a lot of those transactions were Oakland locals that I know that know the owners. So they're much more willing to make those kind of trades.
They
use Puka actively.
Right.
Yeah, the LGS I used to go to and still go to, you know, the guy that Thomas, a friend of mine that runs F&M's over there, he loves to barter in Puka. Like, I've given him stuff from my cube or traded him stuff before for whatever decks he's working on, and the first thing he always says is, oh, can I give it to you in Puka points? And the first thing I always say is no. And then the conversation moves on. But pretty consistently, you know, that group of people does do it, and a lot of that high-end stuff, while those transactions were real, they were much more kind of like just
cultivated,
done locally. They weren't like, you know, I'm sending this sapphire to Singapore via Puka Trade. I'm sure everything's going to be just fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily that those were like, you know, those weren't like a sham or a fucking, you know, PR stunt sort of thing. They were actual.
No, they were transparent.
People that had had a physical reason to have faith in that system, because they're locals and they're close and friends and stuff. So it helped out Puka in them being able to say, look, we traded a fucking a Lotus, but you know, essentially the guy could have just done that across the table.
Drove down the street and said, you know, do it. It wasn't like they needed the majesty of the internet to be able to make that transaction take place.
Oh man.
And kind of
just had balls of steel. He shipped a quadrillion worth of points, man. Balls of steel.
And then hope one of their, like, three customer service people take your case. And then what are they going to do? Refund you all the fucking points you don't want anyway that aren't worth anything? Like,
yeah.
Sorry,
that card's gone, but we can
give you... anyway.
Yeah, that Mox is gone, but we could give you all these points, and hey, we'll give you a bunch of bonus points on top of it.
No, to kind of elaborate on what JR was saying about, you know, make sure if you are still using it or have stuff in it, you know, go points in, points out, money in, money out. I have friends who are tournament players who are actively looking for, you know, more of those tournament staples, whether or not they're trying to build multiple decks or they just want things that are going to look better at their local trade tables. A common thing that they will do is take regional PTQ cards, like multiple Lilianas they have flipped, where, you know, sure, you could sell it, you get a decent amount of money for it, but they'd rather take that card and turn it into 20 or 30 fetch lands. So you just have to be very active, have that be the one card you put up there. Once you move it, then work as hard as you can to get all those cards back out of it, takes a lot of time and energy. And now you're saying, someone like JR, your time is money. That's not the kind of time I want to spend to slowly grind some Puka Point value when you could just go make real money in the real world and then just buy those cards. But that's the kind of system they use to at least, you know, not leave a bunch of shit up there all the time, or worse yet, be left with points.
Yeah, I'm actually dumb. I could probably figure out how to just, like, print out a label at home and drop it in the mailbox, even with insurance. Maybe not. Maybe not with insurance. I don't know.
Up to a certain amount, yes, but it depends on what you're sending.
The whole issue is going to the fucking post office and waiting in line. Like, that's just that's where I'm done. Done.
You can circumvent a lot of that at home, but I find myself having to go to the post office a lot.
And you live in New York. I don't even do that shit. I refuse that shit, and I live in Ridgecrest.
Where there's like one somehow, post office like, with one nice old lady working for me.
Uh-huh.
No matter what time it is, they calibrate it. Like there's a certain number of tellers open, but it's in a busy New York post office, and there's like a, you know, a turnstile, a corral of, you know,
god awful people too.
Aggressive.
There's a corral. I forget the you know, turnstile. The you know, the rope on the poles that go back and forth.
Yeah, like, yeah. I know what you're talking
like
about.
20 people, and it's always full. It's always exactly full. Like, I don't know like how they do it. But you go in sometimes and you're like, oh, maybe it won't, like, there won't be anyone there. Like, it's always, like, exactly full or, like, overflowing. Like, it's never, like, it's half full. Like, it's just, like, it's, like, a, I don't know how they know.
Well, they probably just tell that as soon as it starts to get past, like, the end of the line, they're just all right, Meredith, go home. We're done with you. Yeah, we're catching up. Go home. And then you just start cutting.
But you go there at, like, weird times. You go there at, like, you know, like, 6 o'clock on a Thursday, you feel like that would be a lot better than noon on a Monday, but it's like the same, and you're like, what?
No matter
what.
Now, 1:30 in the afternoon on a weekday that isn't right at the beginning or right at the end of the month. That's your prime time to go to the post office, trust me. Because you don't want to do it right when they open, because little old ladies are going to look at every single stamp in the store to buy some. You don't want... Like, any weekday that's
not the beginning of the month
like or the end of the month. As long as it's not the beginning
Mondays
of the month or the
bad.
End of the month. Because if people are there trying to get fucking cashier's checks for their rent or paying bills, like, the 15th can be kind of sketchy sometimes, but not as bad. But you want to go, this is like a lot of the people take their lunches at noon or like 12:30, so then you're not going to have as many cashiers. You want to go after they get their lunches done, but you want to go before the soccer moms get their kids out of school to then go do their post office work. So 1:30 is like the prime target to get in and out of the post office. Yeah. That's when I go.
I think our main point is, like, you get to that point where you're sitting online and it's like, holy shit, I'm going to be in line for 15 minutes and I already drove out here and I'm just like... You know,
just
taking
go buy
45 minutes out of my real life to clear $15 or
something.
Yeah,
just go to the LGS and buy list it where there's not as long of a line. And then
I've got to do it online. Like, I'll check my email while I'm in line. I'll wait to check my emails. I'll wait to make responses. I'll usually try to line up a lot of my day's doings so that I can get the most out of my time spent in line. But then again, like some of the post office I used to go to by my school campus would often have wait times in the neighborhood of 25 minutes to get through the line. Ugh. So I I would definitely manage my time. And the best is, like, you get in line, and then someone, like, three spots ahead of you, you stay in line with them for, like, 15 minutes, and then they just bail. They're just like, okay, this isn't worth my time. And, like, you have no concept of the idea of time investment. Like, you literally just threw away time when you were investing it prior. So simple. You're two spots from the front, lady.
Yeah.
Like, where are you going now?
It's fine to walk in and say, oh, fuck this, I don't have time for this, but to wait through the time, and or half the time even, and then be like, okay,
yeah,
now I'm out.
Yeah. And then the entire time, every American in a post office is bitching to high heaven that it takes so fucking long. When a postage stamp costs less than literally anything else in this country now, there's nothing you can get. Not like even a can of soda, like even like the fucking Ralph's off brand, you can't even get for the same price as a postage stamp. And yet people are going to complain the post office isn't working hard enough to return your fucking pants from Amazon of the wrong fucking size. Like, oh my God, people, get the fuck out.
Oh, and the rants come out of nowhere. We start talking about postage and fucking TSG's starting to get angry.
It's like I stand there in these people and I'm on my phone. I'm busy. Like, I'm never, like, tapping my watch, or I'm never, like, complaining they're not working hard enough. Like, I don't take these people for granted. I know they have a shitty job, and this is a lot of work for them. And I'm in Oakland a lot of the time. So literally today when I went to the post office, there was a woman in a motorized wheelchair. And she didn't want to have to keep, you know, turning on her motorized wheelchair. So she walks in, and there's like, two people behind me when she gets in the line. And she's like, I'm just going to park off to the side. I know exactly where I'm in line. I'm between you two people. And then for the next 15 minutes while we're all in line, she keeps trying to ask the people in front of the people she walked in with, oh, honey, was I in line next to you? Like, she keeps trying to jump the line. Like, oh, I was right behind you, right? I was right behind you. Like no one's not going to know because they didn't see her come in. And then she starts to get in it with people at the thing. She's like, I'm not tripping. I'm fine. I'm just fine. And the whole time, I'm not saying anything because I'm not gonna get in these arguments with these people over nothing. Like, I'm gonna continue to tweet you about what time we're starting tonight. Check, make sure my schedule for tomorrow is all set. And then, you know, she even tries to talk to me about it. Like, oh, I was behind you. I'm like, no, lady, leave me alone. I'm here to send this shit to Kentucky. Just back off. Yeah, that's a lot of my afternoons right now.
Old
Oakland post office.
The Oakland post office.
But I can schedule my time well. I know how to get in, get out, get it done.
He's like a post office aficionado.
I'm just very zen. It's very zen when I'm in there. That's all it is.
Just get in your group. Your email.
The thing that tilts me. I always get behind the motherfucker that's mailing, like, 200 wedding envelopes.
Oh.
Like, it's happened, like, two or three fucking times. And I'm just like, oh, my God, is this fucking happening again? Oh, my God.
Why is it always me?
I mean, that, you know, I don't know. I think that's not that bad. Like, I just can't believe the little old ladies want to look at every single fucking stamp option every fucking day. Like, they change. Or if your fucking nephew cares what stamp you use to send them a letter they're not going to read. Like, who fucking cares what shape heart is on the postage stamp? Let's get the fuck on with it already. No one cares.
You guys spend way more time in post offices than I ever have in my entire life. Like, I could probably count. I've probably been to the post office, like, less than 30 times my entire life. Like, fuck the post office. If I can't mail it from my house, I'm probably not going to mail it to you. Unless, you know, and it was even, like, most of those times were since I've been in the Magic community and had to send cards to people. Like, I don't go to the post office for anything. And, again, like, you guys would fucking love your lives if you got to go to my post office. Because it's just like going to the DMV in this town. It's like, it sucks compared to, like, you know, other things in life. But it's amazing compared to, like, every other post office or every other DMV in the world because
it's
we
like
live in a shit little town.
Yeah, like an airport in, like, a small city. You just, like, walk the fuck in. It's like, just walk the fuck in.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm supposed to be on that plane because I'm the only guy on it. And they're like, oh, yeah.
Well, there's only four planes today anyway, so it wasn't going to be that hard to pick out.
Right. Yeah, which one would you like to get on, sir?
Well, let's try talking about something that will maybe infuriate. All right. So I gotta roll it back. What do you mean you cursed it? What do you mean?
That was a thing today on the Twitter.
On what? Oh, on Twitter. What
on Twitter.
What was?
What was on Twitter today?
So there was like a streamer that the editor of you know, the mothership was saying, Blake was saying that he wanted to put on the site, but you know, there happened to be like some profanity in there, so he just couldn't put it on the site. Streamer, I think it was MTGODoc maybe, but yeah, so people were talking about that today, and it's not.
Oh yeah, it's not something about that.
It's not news or anything really. That's just.
Yeah, I saw. Well, I didn't see that part. I saw like Saffron Olive said something, or like there was a conversation involving it. He said something about that. I think stemmed off of that, where there are certain places for like NC-17 content or cursing. It went from cursing into like there's certain places for like NC-17 content, which. Would it be anything to do with, like, me or Matty Studios or, you know, Heavy Meta? And I was like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree. We are
the entirety of my opus.
Yeah. Everything I've done. Yeah, I get you. But, you know, there's a lot of agreement. But then that also sparked a lot of our, like, fans are like, oh, yeah, if you guys – because Matty said something about, yeah, you, like, we tried to do, like, a bleeped – or we contemplated doing, like, a bleeped or a censored episode at one point, and it was just fucking god-awful garbage, and it wouldn't work. And a bunch of people were like, oh, yeah, you'd lose a listener if you tried that shit. Like, yeah, that's who we are. We have to fucking cuss and say god-awful things. Because we're, like, I guess
– weird.
What?
It's just weird to think someone would stop listening if we weren't being profane.
I think that's it. Like, it's one of those things. It's like who we are. People are so used to it. They're like, ah, oh, you guys are fake and lame because you guys aren't saying fuck all the time. I mean, not saying that everybody on the cast has to say fuck all the time, but I feel like if, you know, there weren't enough F-bombs dropped in an episode, like people would think something was wrong. And that's who we are. That's why people listen to us. They're like, oh, man. I like my magic content, and I also like an abundance of curse words. And not just curse words, like, you know, saying fucking cunt is one thing, but like the terrible shit that we get into saying that, like, sometimes we go, should we have said that and then just flung it out into the internet, or should we have maybe edited that out? A lot of times it doesn't get edited out, but people still love us anyway. But that's, again, why we don't get to be on the mothership. Unless, well, we were, you know, my ass was, and then there was the time where they, you know, talked about us in Vegas and, you know, screwed up the name and said it was PG-13. But, like, at least that, you know, E for effort.
Okay, so where was I?
Onward, sorry.
Yeah, no, I actually had a very heated discussion. This week about the fact that Wizards is once again trying to throttle the data that comes out of MTGO. And I know this has been a something that Maddie has really loved, you know, when Goldfish was kind of taking all that replay data, making aggregate and showing you a metagame breakdown. Wizards has asked them to stop that practice. I believe the episode immediately afterwards, I talked about how the fact that there was probably going to be a new website the next day using the exact same thing. Apparently now there's a premium website where you can get a very similar service. Probably not all related to Goldfish. I'm not going to make assumptions one way or the other. But once again, Wizards is now trying to kind of police what information comes out of MTGO with really restricting players inside of leagues on when they can see replays for the period of time that they can see them and what, you know, like, again, kind of control that information that used to be readily accessible to everybody. Have you seen this at all, JR? Do you have an opinion on it?
I mean, I think as long, yeah, I don't like it, but as long as they still publish daily MTGO results, I think there'll be enough data to for at least – so, yeah, in terms of the various possible functions of MTG Goldfish, you know, they used to do the matchup percentages, and so that went away. But if they took this functionality away, like, you don't lose too much. As long as you still have, as long as they still publish, you know, league results, you know, like every day, publish a league result in a daily result for modern, say, that's fine. You can at least construct your, you know, staple breakdown so that you have an objective view of the format. But to like just
so a lot of the question that people have had is why bother? Why restrict this information at all?
Yeah, so that's kind of what I was saying. It doesn't even really add that much, but it's just like their policy is shifting. But as long as as long as they like keep publishing daily results for Magic Online, that's fine. That's enough information. But once that goes away, that's like a serious downgrade to my experience.
Because you feel like that information needs to be made public for everyone to be on equal footing in terms of competitive Magic? Do you feel like people are going to have an unfair advantage if that information is taken away from the public and it becomes information that is only gleaned from other sources? You know, I'm for one, want to take the unpopular side of this opinion and say that, you know, part of the problem we have now with the game is that the amount of people playing it and breaking it down is so many and it happens so fast. The Wizards need to protect the products they're making as much as they can. The products that are coming out, especially the quote-unquote tournament products, the sets that are going to be played standard, need to have a longer shelf life than they currently have. And right now, there's no good plan to keep them relevant.
Sure. I mean, I guess you know, you're dealing with standard on one hand and modern on the other hand, and really what you just want to have both formats be healthy. You know, think about it in those ways. So I don't know what, you know, that doesn't go, you know, that doesn't determine that decision either way. But
Well, when I was having this conversation earlier in the week, a lot of it boiled down to, you know, what would Magic the Gathering be like right now if we didn't have the internet? Like, how would people build decks? How would a metagame break down? What would things be like?
Go to the post office and send letters to your friends on what you had done recently at a tournament.
Is it healthier for the game to not have this information shipped out at the speed and frequency that it is right now? Or do we need to have all the information all the time? Which is better for the game?
Well, it's a question of what's better for Wizards and, like, what's better for the game.
I don't know.
I mean, they're not that far off from each other. I think for the game, you know, that's like, it's tantamount to saying, you know, in the early days of Magic, they knew the cards were broken, but they basically didn't think that anyone would go out of their way to collect four Lotus, Black Lotus, or whatever, you know. So, I don't think there's a big difference one way or the other, but it is interesting to think about.
I think inherently the faster we get the information and the faster they're printing cards. I mean, like, there's going to be an intersection between, like, we're just getting the information and solving this shit faster than they can research and develop good, you know, quality Magic cards before it just becomes a diluted pile of shit. Like, you know, you could start releasing sets faster, you know, as a format, or start releasing cards faster as a format, you know, starts to get solved or broken. I mean, you see it in modern, they're kind of trying to plug the dam, I guess. You know, the information's there faster, people break shit real quick, and then they ban cards, or they ban or unban cards according to that, and they're doing it frequently. They're trying to keep the format healthy, and, like, you know, yeah, we still have a span of time before the next ban restricted announcement, so you might have to suffer through a month of this fucking deck, and then it's going to get banned if it's bad enough. Whereas, like, with Standard, they don't, you know, they, in very rare cases, they, like, release a card into Standard, and then it gets broken that quick to where they have to ban cards in Standard. You know, sometimes it happens. But I guess the solution is, like, with Standard is you could, you know, potentially release cards faster, or, I mean, they went as far as to change the block structure. You could also change the set structure. You could release them faster and in smaller batches. You know, you could fucking essentially cut, like, you know, each new set we're getting, you could cut it in half and then cut in half the time that those are in Standard, or you know, as they get cut in half the time before they get the next set gets released, and try to keep the game evolving that way. But at some point, like, we're going to get to the point where the information's fast enough, there's enough people playing the game, there's enough people proficiently playing the game that know what the fuck they're looking at. You know, it's not just casual players sitting around, and it, you know, like, back in the day where it took some time for, like, a guy to figure out this interaction and how well it worked, and then it to spread from his fucking kitchen table to down the street to down the street, and then, you know, around the world. Now, yeah, it's lightning fucking speed, and so you can up the production, I guess, or the speed of production to kind of help match it. But at some point, like, where does everything there's going to be an intersection where everything dilutes, where they're like, Wizards is all right, well, now we're at a point where we're releasing 10 cards a week and just a constant stream of 10 new cards a week, and let's see what happens with that. Like, it's going to get to a point, like, yeah. I don't think it's that bad right now.
What's going to happen when, you know, people have been talking about AI playing games recently, and you know, it'd be very hard for AI to build a constructed deck, but you could train AI to play a constructed game, or play a game, or probably draft, like, a draft deck.
Right.
So when it gets to the point where you can train an AI to play a game of Magic and then pit it against a gauntlet of cards and just reduce your, you know, testing time by tenfold.
Right. Just plug the information into the whatever system it is, and then come out with, like, just a breakdown of the statistics and be like, okay, well, I'm playing this deck. I'm going to go play this deck because this is the best deck out there, you know? And
we talked about a money draft with, it's like Jagger and, like, Jack Wang and, Jason, all our friends the other week. And then, like, Travis Wee was, like, talking about it this week. Our episode isn't out yet, but yeah, it's like there are lots of things that AI, like, isn't interesting, like, in terms of Magic, but in terms of, like, testing decks, AI is like, you know. So at that point, like, what are you gonna do? I mean,
yeah.
So in that sense, these rules are archaic, because, like, you'll be able to, like, make your own, just like brute force testing at some point.
Right. Just run it through the gauntlet while you go to bed, and then wake up in the morning and be like, oh, I guess this is the deck that I'm playing. Now I just got to kind of,
Or you just, like, tweak it a little bit and do it again, and just keep tweaking it and doing it again and do it again, all, like, you know, in a few days, you know.
You've got every possible outcome.
Way more work than a limited number of people doing reps.
Right.
Yeah, you know, we're really at the tip of an iceberg on a topic here where, you know, the one of the things that hasn't changed in this game in a very, very long time is the way Standard is kind of built, what its parameters are, although that has shifted ever so slightly recently. The way content is produced, how often content is produced has shifted again ever so slightly. But it still hasn't changed that much. And we can go all the way back to the beginning of this game and look at how someone like Richard Garfield thought it was going to kind of populate and how there would be pockets of metagames and card accessibility and you know, things that were popular based on card availability or
right.
player tendencies and all those kind of things. And we've completely eliminated that now. You look at the end of this last standard season, and it was kind of like, well, if you're not playing four color rally, why? You know, oh, you don't like the mirror match. Well, then what are you going to do? You might still lose to it anyway. And it was a lot of, you know, what's the most concise build of four color rally playing against the mirror match, and what can you do for the mirror? Because, you know, you can't really beat that combination of cards because of its resilience and the way it can grind and its overall combo. And that was just, you know, millions of games having been played over all of these players through that amount of time. And one of the solutions that you already mentioned here is put out product more often. And I think you're going to get so much immediate, quick backlash on that, where players are like, well, I just bought Shadows of the Innistrad, and now you push this Eldritch Moon release forward faster, and
right.
you know, my Avacyns aren't worth as much for as long as anymore because they're not in standard as long, and why'd I spend all these money on cards that they're going to be changing so often? And that's a slippery slope, and you know, as we've seen with most things in Magic, it takes 18 months for us to really see results, even if they're going to go closer that direction. But those are fears that are so large, I can't imagine. Even for the Hasbro quarterly earnings report, where in the short term you'd see great gains by changing the game in that fashion, it
right.
would not be good for the long run. So them controlling information of this variety seems like a very small step in the direction of trying to stretch out the longevity of the product. And I think it's a good idea. I like it. I'm in the minority here
yeah.
where I think, you know, trying to kind of subvert that or make players go out and do it for themselves the best way they can, even in the face of something like Star City mm-hmm. Games having quote-unquote high level, depending on who you are, tournament series that's happening all the time with hundreds of thousands of players playing every week in your face, in your home, trying to show you what the best things are, you're still got to do the best you can, especially from Wizard's standpoint, to kind of
right.
protect the integrity of that product.
No, I agree there.
Yeah, yeah. And, Trey, I mean, I used the term mid-level before. Star City is distinctly mid-level, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at last season, and I think that, you know, the four-color rally deck is a great example of players just kind of all came to a consensus and very close to a build of what the deck that was the best in Standard. And the backlash or kind of, you know, response to that was something like the Hardened Scales deck, which may or may not have even been very good, but it was at least something different, and it took someone thinking outside of that kind of hive mind mentality, is a dangerous phrase to use, but to just do something else in the format. So
I think standard environments with easier mana are more fluid in that sense, and that's something that I've, like, sort of, you know, if the cards are too good and it just becomes like a good stuff format, sure, that's not the greatest. But in general, I think more mana fixing in Standard is more healthy because the format tends to shift more from week to week. Whereas, like, the less, you know, and we'll see, I guess, like, you know, mana is going to get a little more constrictive here. So,
true.
But my intuition, and I think, like, some evidence says that, like, the more easier mana fixing is in Standard, the better. But again, if the cards are too powerful, then it's all like good stuff. So,
right. I think that's a big argument that's always there with that. Like, if you make the mana too easy in Standard, then it's just going to boil down to, well, I guess, you know, it's the opposite side of the argument. Cause like the argument I've always heard is that if you have the mana is perfect in Standard, then it's just going to be one deck. Because the best cards are going to be played, and they're going to be that easy to play, because your mana is perfect. You can, you know, you can get outside of your color constraints and play the best fucking cards in Standard and have no problem casting them. Whereas, you know, a restrictive mana base is going to give you, you know, of course, you got to pick one side or the other kind of thing. But yeah, you know, maybe you're right in the sense that it creates a more fluid thing, I guess.
From week to week, there's more room to shift. You know,
right.
Like, every week, they're like, "Oh, these are the two decks to shoot for. So let's like do a little bit of this and a little bit of that," and it just kind of shifts week to week. And I think that's kind of a thing. But I mean, no one has ever like studied that objectively. But
yeah,
you know, in terms of like, you know, if people to like rate what standard environments they like based on, and you know, put that against the mana.
like quality. What? Yeah, the quality of mana in that current standard.
Yeah, they probably like. It probably turns out that they like having good mana.
Yeah, I mean, we as Magic players tend to like having good.
At least
mana.
In terms of colors, in terms of like quantity and power, they probably don't like having a lot of mana. Mm. You know, quick.
They just want to be able to have, yeah, not so much, I guess, ramp.
Stuff. Yeah, because well, that's like Eldrazi or like, you know, Urza's Saga combo shit.
Yeah, but like, but, if you, you know, I mean, hey, that's why I like Modern. You got shocks and fetches. Like, it works
and,
out great.
And I think like the new regime is going to be so good for you. Okay, like, burn, I mean, mm-hmm. people are going to be trying. You know, to do the thing with the combo and you know, Ancestral Vision. It's not the most impressive card against, you know, what you're trying to do.
Burn decks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that does segue very perfectly into the next topic of the evening. And of course, mm-hmm. we do have a banned restrictedness announcement. We had Tony on the show last week. We talked about our expectations there. Mine were met, that's for sure. I thought I was going to go, and that was going to be what was going to be leaving from the Eldrazi deck. And I think, as Wizards has shown us, they think the format is fast enough that they're not afraid of a Sword of the Meat combo or possibly the biggest, baddest blue draw spell there could be in the format from what we can see. So, JR, are you playing Modern right now?
I was playing a little bit my anti-Eldrazi deck with the Rune Halos and the Dungeon Geist, like it's pretty good, but so that yeah. haven't played that for the last month. I played that like about a month ago, and haven't played that for the last month. But it was fun, and I had some success that like one league I played it with, but it seemed good. But I'm super excited. I wasn't even like that down on the last Modern environment, although I can see how it's not a good environment at all. But really excited about these combos coming back and Vision coming back. Like,
how bad does Eldrazi get hosed from losing Eye? Like, I mean, is it just done, or is it not as powerful, so it's going to be one of the other decks in the format?
I haven't tested it at all. You know,
I haven't fucked with it whatsoever. So,
as Tony had mentioned on the show last week, you know, they still have four temple. They right. can temple two temple into turn two, Thought Not Seer, et cetera, et cetera. So it's quite possible it's still a deck. It's just not the kind of, you know, 10 power on turn two powerhouse that was kind of going around before, which sounds just fine to me.
Yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Think it needs to be that way.
I mean, I don't know. Like, they still have options of Simeon Spirit Guide and Heartless Summoning, maybe. Like, you know, people were like shitting on Heartless Summoning before, but I don't. But no, probably
that
not.
Might be a
probably
thing.
Not. But I think, yeah. Again, like you're in a good place, Kevin, with Burn. I think.
Oh yeah. I always like being in a good place with Burn.
People, a lot of people were saying on Twitter. This is an interesting thing. Like, they were saying, why would you ever put Ancestral Vision and this combo in the same deck? Because it's kind of a non-bo, because it's all just, like, slow, clunky stuff. And I think the answer is, like, because can either one of them alone, you know, control was already, you know, at a... Just not doing well in Modern.
Right, right.
So you're banning this one card. So does that really make control? You know, the Thopter combo and the Vision. Like, so I think that's why people are trying to jam them both into the same deck. Because, like, if you do one or the other, it may not get there. But you just want to see. You're just like, all right, let's put it all in the same deck, you know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's just the right off the bat thought that, I mean, I guess a lot of people get, whether it be a spoiled card or a BNR fucking list announcement where, I don't know. We all as Magic players get excited about shit. You know, we all love this game, and so you get excited about shit. And I think some of that shit stems straight from that. It's like, oh, what if I do this? What if I do this? Oh, this might work. And yeah, on paper it might work, but of course, you know, once it gets into application, it might be a different story.
Yeah,
I've done that 100 times where I'm like, oh, dude, this card's gonna be fucking sweet in my burn deck, and I'm like, oh wait, no, that's a terrible idea.
book burning or whatever.
yeah. What's that? Oh yeah.
Book burning. But I've had some bad ones. Like I'm weaning myself from the opinion that Browbeat is a good card. I'm getting there. I'm just like, all right, Browbeat is not a good card. Like it seems like it's almost a good card because it's like it's either five fucking damage or three cards, but.
The Browbeat's
not a good card.
It just yeah, there's something about it. It doesn't really work. And I guess that's the whole thing behind, you know, like I've always been told, like it's really rare you're going to find a Punisher mechanic that actually works out well because you don't want to give your opponent a choice at all. And, you know, yeah, sometimes in some games it's going to work out great. But
I mean, that's definitely the thing in modern. Modern is such a brutal format. Like, just like, yeah, draw cards, I'm going to kill you now.
Right.
But. It seems like it's almost like even just like five damage for three mana. It's like, you know.
But goddamn, and see that's the problem I've always had with. I mean, you know, yeah, five damage is great, but fuck, dude, for three mana, like in a burn shell, the way your deck is supposed to work, three mana should
that's your turn.
You,
yeah,
three mana should net you nine damage, not five. Like, you know, yeah. We're not worried about. You know, people always have the argument. Well, like, you know. It's in one card. Like, people always tell me that when I'm evaluating cards for a burn, they're like, oh, but this is in one card instead of three, you know, like, yeah, that's great and all, but like, I've got 60 cards in this deck and I don't plan on using very many of them before you're dead. If I do, then my deck's not working right anyway. That's the problem I've always had with Browbeat. Like, of course I'd love card draw and yeah, I'd like to do five damage, but the way it, like sitting at the mana cost that it does, it just doesn't quite do it for me. I've thought about it a few times before too, and I'm like, I want to like this card. I want it to work, but it's not there. You know, if I got to spend fucking three mana on, and again, like if I could decide whether I was doing five damage or fucking getting the cards, like that's a whole different story. But like to spend three mana to let you pick, you know, of course, depending on the matchup, like they're gonna pick the shit you don't want to have.
And it's a little bit like Vexing Devil.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Like, the only card, like Punisher mechanic card that I've ever played with any success is Vexing Devil, which is still kind of a, you know, it's iffy because of that. Like, it's
yeah. And I was saying that just like Jagger this weekend, like he came over, we played a bunch of cube games under this like new kind of drafting strategy that I devised, but we're talking about red cards to add, and I was like, yeah, I need to get Vexing Devil in there because I have all the other two ones, the new guy. I didn't even replace Jigglypuff. I just added him to
the print
in the new set.
New set. Oh, I'm not sure what it's called.
But apparently he's the only 2/1 without any drawback for red ever. I didn't even realize that until today.
What the fuck is it now? Now I gotta remember what it was.
I know. So anyway, I was like, you know,
Falcon
I'm not running Vex.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm not running Vexing Devil in my cube. I should probably do that if I'm running all these other cards. And the first click was like, I don't know about that. I was like, no, dude, like, why not? And I was like, and he was like, yeah, I guess. I mean. All those Jigglypuffs are bad draws late, right? Like, so.
It's Vexing Devil is one of those where it's, yeah, like it, you know, it dies pretty easily, you know, if you're wanting to get a creature on, if you're creature driven, like, yeah, it was fine in like a burn shell before a lot of cards got printed that kind of helped either cards got printed or the mana got better, like the, you know, so you could print cards or you could use cards that were in other colors that did the same shit. Like when I first was running just mono red burn, like Vexing Devil at one mana was good, and it, like, where I needed to fill a card slot that was fast and effective. But after that, it was like, oh, okay, this is still only, that was back when I was using, like, Hellspark Elemental and shit like that. It also depends on the metagame, too. Like, you know, back then, I was using Hellspark Elemental, and I was using Vexing Devil because there wasn't nearly as much on the ground. There wasn't as much of a board, or like, there weren't as many creature decks to have to deal with. Then all of a sudden, that card goes to completely to shit when there's a good chance you're going to have anything on the other end, you know, where it's like, yeah, it's great where they have to either take the damage or leave a fucking 4/3 and an open board. I mean, that's a great situation. But when they're like, oh, okay, well, whatever, I've got fuck tons of creatures and I got plenty of shit to deal with that anyway, so of course they're going to leave him out there, and then it's going to die, and then you just kind of blew a turn. But in a situation like, I mean, TSG, you got more on this, I'm sure, than I do. But in, like, a cube situation, I would play him. Like, you know, he's a good, yeah, solid, I mean, pet card.
It, like, my thing, whole thing is, like, if you're in the mindset where it's, like, every Jackal Pup you see, like, that's in your cube. But, I mean, but TSG is, like, past, like, he's, like, he cut Jackal Pup for that, so he's maxed out on
Indeed
Jackal Pups.
Indeed I did.
Oh.
Yeah, I am maxed out on Jackal Pups. Because Red, for me, Red's trying to do more than just play really big guys and trying to get slightly more out of the color. So yeah. Because of that, we do need slightly more out of it.
Yeah, that's the thing, like, that would be more extensive conversation perhaps for money draft, but just working on my own cube and looking at other cubes, like your cube is like a benchmark cube that I look at. Just talking about differences would be pretty interesting. But,
well, I'll have to actually be on your show one of these days.
You need to do that shit.
Yeah. In terms of drafting, I don't know, like, did you have, were you on to some other topic?
No, man. Well, like, yeah, we moved into cube conversation quite easily there.
Yeah. In terms of drafting cubes, so Slick Jagger was over this weekend, and we had this new idea where I always had this problem of, like, having my cube and having a cube and not being able to draft it. But then, like, there's, like, one person over, and then you're like, oh, let's just, like, Rockchester draft my cube. But then it's, like, kind of miserable because it's not really cube drafting. You just end up, like, you know, drafting some mid-range deck and, like, all this, like, weird hate drafting, you know. So I had this idea where we would just draft 20 packs of 12 cards, but only draft the first four cards out of each pack, two cards each. So we would end up with 40 cards each. And it seemed good. It seemed like a good system. Like, you can maybe even, like, relax the ratio a little bit, so that you don't throw out two-thirds of the, maybe you only throw out half the cards, so it's, like, less management.
Right.
It seems like what I would want to do is I'd want to start to recycle the stuff that I had
left behind from
high pick packs.
Absolutely. Absolutely, that's, like, the theoretically correct way to do it, but in reality, it's already enough of a pain in the ass to deal out 20 packs for two guys and go back and forth. Like,
no, you just take all these piles of, like, 12, or sorry, of 8 you've got left over, start to shuffle them together, and then start to pull certain amounts out of that as the draft goes on to kind of simulate. Like, you know, you're seeing fewer options, or you're seeing packs that have already been picked through a little bit more.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that much work probably to just have someone on board with just mixing the stuff back in. But I think, yeah, like, so the whole, like, I had a decent You know, Slick tweeted a couple pictures of his decks. So, like, the decks were, like, serious decks. Like, I had a Reanimator deck slash Oath deck, and I had, like, 4 Reanimator effects and, you know, two or three discard effects in it, and plus Entomb on top of that. Like, the decks looked like real decks, you know? Just going with a head-on-head draft where I would guess historically, like, that's the problem with cubes is that you can't really draft head-on-head like that. It just doesn't really have the same experience.
We usually end up doing a Winston draft. That's the most popular version we do one-on-one, and we're pretty happy with the results. I mean, yeah, what you talked about in terms of there being a lot of mid-rangey type stuff is true. You know, your two-power guys, for one, are much more rare to come together, but it's not, they're not complete blanks. Like, that's, and I would say that some of the decisions we've made for the cube that I run have actually been influenced by the fact that so much two-player cube gets played between myself and whoever, you know, waiting in an airport or just hanging out between rounds of a pre-release like this last weekend. So you can kind of offset it a little bit. But, you know, for something fresh, what you're talking about, it makes sense. I would just want to find a way to try to simulate, you know, like, oh, you know, 6 other players have looked at these, and here's what's coming back. More like, you know, you guys cherry-pick a bunch of packs, and then you obviously have very high power-level decks when you have so many more options. You should kind of have to force yourself to go back through the stuff you left behind once in a way or another.
It also helps to, like, teach myself about the, like, in terms of archetypes. Like, I can almost, like, sit there, like, literally, if I wanted to, just force a different, like, just do the draft against myself and force certain decks on each hand. And if it turns out, okay, this is like a aggro getting deck versus a, you know, Sneak and Show deck, and just see how that goes. And probably Sneak and Show, which is probably, yeah.
Yeah, long enough timeline, JR is definitely going to come up with a very strong solitaire cube format.
I'd be down for some solitaire cube. I feel like that's something I could really get
down. I think there's a lot of people out there that would be very interested in that, because the amount of hours that people spend on their cubes and they don't actually get to play with them. Mm-hmm. And I'm a prime offender of that. There would be some kind of, you know, like, you feel like a release or some kind of, like, you're like, yes, I have to play this game. It's not just like a Face the Hydra deck or something stupid like that.
That's my whole message about it. It's just like, yeah, you just change the rules of Magic a little bit, and you could actually play your cube. You know, you just need, like, one other person.
Yeah, shit. I feel like I need to build a Face the Hydra cube now. Just something that I can play myself.
Do we have anything else on the Magic related docket?
The Magic side of things, we're almost at the bottom. Oh, like, the last thing we had was any more strong feelings about Shadows of Innistrad. You know, I think I mentioned at the top of the show that I think I was the only one who was hands-on with it this last weekend. Did either of you guys get to play with it at all? Was there any dungeon magic?
No dungeon magic. I played like one match against my brother-in-law. He came over fucking Friday night, and then I got violently sick, which really sucked. And I spent the rest of the weekend writhing on the bathroom floor or in my bed with a gnarly, gnarly fucking stomach virus. So I got to play like zero magic at all since last week. It really sucked. Like, we started to have a good time. We were drinking. We were gonna start playing some magic. You know, it kind of, the traditional me drinking with my brother-in-law, so we're bullshitting about magic for a lot longer than we're playing. And then we finally sat down to start playing and got about a match in. I started feeling shitty, so we kind of let it go. And I was like, dude, I got to go, man. I'm going to go to bed. And then I woke up later with, like, gnarly stomach flu. So, yeah, I got jack shit for fucking games in. And those games were just, like, his ninja deck against the zombies deck that I've been playing, that I put the Relentless Dead card into and didn't really even get to see how it interacted, yet again. So yeah, I'm basically proxy. That's like 2 weekends in a row, or not in a row, but 2 weekends now that I've tried to play with that deck and Relentless Dead proxied into it, and have actually gotten to see zero interactions with it. So I'm pretty sure the ones I pre-ordered are going to be here before I get to see how the card actually works in the deck anyway.
We got to get some fucking Gumby, man. Got to come through, pick up some pre-release kits or just some release packs. You guys going to have a little, drunk sealed like you've been up
that's
to recently?
That's one of the things. I was talking to Daniel about that, too. We were going to do it Friday. Daniel and I were going to play, and we had talked about last week, like, you know, maybe fucking, I was like, oh yeah, you know, the pre-release weekend snuck up on me. We had plans with a bunch of other friends on Saturday night, like my wife and I. So I was like, it kind of sucks. We can't do the same thing because Friday night, him coming over to play Magic, we couldn't do the pre-release thing because they don't let you come buy the packs from them until after the pre-release is over on Saturday. So wouldn't have worked out. And then the devil wouldn't have worked out because I was fucking sick as balls by then anyway. But that is something I definitely want to get more of going on here is like definitely on pre-release weekends, getting more than just me, David, and, you know, Daniel together, get a couple more friends together and having a little pre-release in the dungeon. And then also just playing more fucking Magic. But God damn it, real life makes it hard.
Yeah, you and those 2 kids you got now, man.
2 kids and job and stuff like that. You know, I thought like not being in my band anymore was going to give me more time. It really hasn't. I think the amount of hours that I dropped out of my week by like leaving Barstool, I think I've more than made up in watching NHL games. So I really haven't like netted any time there. Like I have less time to do shit than I did before.
Very unfortunate.
I know, it's terrible. I'll get there. I'm trying to find a way to balance these things in life. I'm at this weird transition where I'm growing up a little bit, and, you know, at the same time, like, I love playing Magic, so, like, that's not ever going to go away. But the time to play it is just becoming less lately. But, you know, we all go through these phases. Like, you know, you luckily are so fucking entrenched in this game. Well, both of you are so entrenched in this game that, like, you know, you'll still find the time and you'll be able to get some games in. Or, you know, even if you, like, TSG, you and I were talking about beforehand, and even on Twitter, is like, you know, haven't played too much lately, haven't been, you know, gotten too many games in or anything, but at least, you know, you were able to go to your pre-release, go do that. That's, like, not playing much Magic for you. I'm at one of those points where I've been playing less Magic lately, but we all kind of go through those ebbs and flows where it'll come a lot stronger for a while and then it'll be less and less. So, you know, I will get back into playing more often. Now I basically just get to watch from afar on Twitter, play the occasional match of Magic, and talk Magic on this podcast with you guys every week.
It keeps you in the game, though, man. That kind of
exactly.
stuff keeps you around the game, yeah.
Exactly.
Which is good. That's how I see it.
I'm also at an ebb.
Yeah.
And I was going to... Yeah, I haven't been on Moda for a month over, which is my longest gap in a while. But it has nothing to do with... Modern, it's just
your real life getting in the way.
I don't know if you realize. I mean, it's a bunch of things, but I should really be playing my fucking Dungeon Geist deck more. I really should. My Rune Halo Dungeon Geist deck, so good,
so and good.
The thing with like the blue white control in Modern, like, it's just always worth it to splash red for Pyroclast. I'm like,
I will absolutely endorse that stick. It's always worth it to splash red. I don't care,
like,
if you just control or burn.
Have 2 balance. Like, you just like a 2-for-3-for-1 all the time. It's just.
Do you want to break down what your Rune Halo Dungeon Geist deck is?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this at all.
No, I mean, like, this is like old tech. I mean, this is like from weeks ago when the Eldrazi were. So it's just a bunch of cards to hit on Eldrazi. So
oh, I see.
Like Rune Halo is one of them. Dungeon Geist, Restoration Angel with the Dungeon Geist. You had Kitchen Finks. You can go up to like four Kitchen Finks out of the sideboard if you were like dealing with Burn or something.
Oh, that's always nice.
But no, we streamed a little bit with Slick Jagger and Motika a few weeks ago.
Did you have decent success with the fucking whole Eldrazi mess?
I don't remember. We went like 2 weeks or something.
See, that's what I love about you, JR. You're just like me in a lot of ways. I don't fucking remember. Like,
but it felt good. It felt like we were doing something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Doing something together, fighting the menace.
Yeah. So I don't know if we want to get into. I think TSG's the guy. Like if TSG has other Magic topics, he wants to guide us.
That was it, man. We're at the end of the list. From here, we can just go deep in the hole.
All right.
Deep into whatever hole we want to.
Brews and shape. The one I'll mention is Shape Anew.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a one blue. Three generic for you sack an artifact to search your library for an artifact. So it's like a polymorph for artifacts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which it was really interesting until recently when in Origins they had a bunch of those Thopter creatures in red and blue.
Mm-hmm.
That just, they're creatures that produce tokens so that you could just like Shape Anew into a Blightsteel Colossus. And now there are also clues, which is like a non-artifact artifact that produces an artifact. And it just takes like one or two more, I think, like the Shape Anew deck will be something. It won't be that good,
but it'll be worth.
It'll basically be like another exploring. Like polymorph deck, but it might be like something that like pops up one weekend.
Does well.
Yeah, huh. And then like Shape Anew like pops just because like there's like just that one extra clue card that you know feeds into that
makes it worth playing instead of it just being kind of an off thing.
Yeah,
that's the way I feel about zombies now. Like or zombies, you know, before as to zombies now with the new set. There's just enough of them that enough good zombie cards that with zombie synergy to possibly make zombie tribal an actual thing in modern, as opposed to just like a, you know, you play it at the kitchen table because it's fun. There's enough strong zombie cards with synergy and recurring synergy and stuff now that might actually be a thing, but I think it has to be blue black zombies for it to do anything. So, but yeah, it's kind of same idea. You get a couple cards that just set the idea off and make it work.
Yeah, I keep hoping that clues are somehow breakable and constructed, like just making that many permanents that are artifacts is somehow a thing. Like, you know, I keep wanting to be like, oh, smokestacks and tangle wire and all these things that you could do with artifacts, but it's just too slow and there's no format for any of that stuff.
Right.
Yeah. They haven't printed enough cards to like produce clues fast enough.
Right. Yeah. You need a clue factory.
There are tons of combos in Modern that people don't even use. Like, there's Intruder Alarm and Thraben Doomsayer.
Mm.
Intruder Alarm is like one blue and two colorless, and creatures don't untap, but whenever a creature comes into play, all creatures untap. And Thraben Doomsayer is two white, one colorless, and it's just like 1/1, but you can tap it to put a creature into play, and that's a two card combo. Okay. It's slow. It's slow, and it's like vulnerable. It's half vulnerable. Like, so I mean, it's basically vulnerable, but
It's half vulnerable. It's a two-card combo. Half of it's vulnerable.
Half vulnerable is basically like the chain is only as strong as its weakest link, so it's basically vulnerable. All right. Yeah. I mean, that's like a, like, no one – that's like a garbage combo that JR knows about, but, I mean, it is like two cards, a three-card – three mana each combo.
Yeah. But it's a combo. I mean, like, I guess that's the way it works. Like, I see that kind of shit all the time where it's like, oh, man, that seems strong. I guess it's just the way that the metagame breaks down and, like, how well it could act. There's a lot of decks that could just, you know, blindside a metagame and take the weekend down, but, you know, whether they're going to stay
Like, with that one in particular, I think I tried to brew with it, and I was like, it's a non-bo because this is going to be an aggressive deck, and all, like, creatures are just going to be, like, not untapping. So, but in a cube, and that's something that, like, you know, more of like a more in-depth cube discussion with TSG, like the two-card combo concept, that's something that I haven't made my mind up about. And part of it is attractive to me, but then part of it is just like, oh, it's just lame. I don't want to do that. You know, have a bunch of two-card combos in your cube. Like, right now, I'm just, like, on that. You know, it's fun to just know about all these two-card combos in your cube and do them, but ultimately, it's probably not the best thing to do.
Ultimately, not.
They just can't be that narrow. I mean, that's always my thing, is that they've got to be able to function with other cards.
So, I think that's a good borderline case. Thraven Doomsayer. So, and I'm also trying to support a token strategy, but for a powered cube, yeah, that's like very, very slow. Intruder Alarm. So this portion of the card, like, so what do you think about Intruder Alarm? Because, like, you could put a decent amount of cards in your cube that are plausible and are just combo out with Intruder Alarm. And Intruder Alarm on itself is, like, garbage.
I mean, it literally does nothing, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how narrow do you want to get is a common question.
It does nothing unless you're, like, you put it in a control deck and you're playing against, like, a aggro, you know, like a aggro-getting deck or something. But how literally – what was your question?
So, like, so we know, like, it's easier to evaluate Intruder Alarm by itself because we know the card is effectively a blank a lot of the times as it is. I mean, sure, yes, it will do stuff in a game of Magic. I'm not going to argue that with people. But I would look at the other side of the coin, and I would ask the question, because we know it's narrow, how narrow are the cards you want to pair up with it? Because those are the ones I'm going to be far more critical of as you look to put them in your cube.
Sure. So, I mean, there's stuff that might be in your cube anyway. Like,
sure, yeah. I mean, coincidentals are Cranko strong.
Cranko Mob Boss?
Not so much.
Bloodline Keeper?
No, but okay, yeah. I mean, those are cards that have been in my cube in the past.
The obvious ones, not, right? Yeah. So there's Kiki G combos with everything, so
I can just... That one doesn't need help.
The Doomsayer that I mentioned before?
Draven Doomsayer.
Okay, yeah. So, like, I mean, you're effectively describing a lot of okay creatures that are now maybe, like, instant kills. And that kind of category is kind of like, well... Those cards maybe aren't fun on their own, or maybe they're marginal, or maybe they're just passing. And then you end in this binary situation where, okay, well, the game ends immediately. Did you have fun? Or you drew the wrong piece of the combo and they do nothing. And you're like, why did I even show up? It feels like there's not an upside to do that if the cards aren't versatile or modal enough on their own.
Yeah. I mean, this has been a good talk because... I guess the question is, where do you draw the line? So let's say in your cube, you've decided that you want to have Splinter Twin and and Kiyaji, and you have a 600 card cube, how far do you go in terms of supporting that? Do you just have, like, the two, you know, blue three-drop creatures, or do you go beyond that? I guess that's the exact question.
Well, the philosophy I use personally is that the card, any given card itself has to have some beneficial use, or it's going to have to do something on its own without any help. And so you, just like I was saying in the previous example, you look at the kind of the weakest links in the chain. You look at the, what are the good examples here? You look at the, you know, village bell ringers. You look at the, that's probably the best one. Like that guy's not going to make the cut.
Goblin sharpshooter. Goblin sharpshooter does not make the cut.
Yeah, like you have to look at cards of that size to really know if it's going to work for you.
But what about Sky Hussar?
The five mana one, it's frosty colors. Trying to support tokens. Was that, you could forecast it to give a guy flying. Or what, when you cast it, it gives other guys flying or something?
I think you draw two cards when you forecast it. It's like an insane forecast.
Oh, really? That's not the one that gives flying? I was thinking maybe like Pride of the Clouds put guys in play. Yeah, so I've had this exact scenario I have dealt with. And I am in the camp where I play Kiki-Jiki for value right now, and I don't play Splinter Twin because it doesn't have enough value on its own. Creature enchantments are still very fragile in a power cube environment. And conversely, I play Pestermite for value, we play Restoration Angel for value, Zealous Conscripts for value. So those kind of two-card combos, like you're alluding to, come together, but they're not the be-all, end-all of, you know, like, this is I made a combo thing. Like, we're going to have a combo. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you could definitely draft.
A current fetish where I'm like, oh, I want to have, like, every possible two card combo ever in the history of Magic in my cube, except for like Time Vault stuff, because people just for some reason hate that.
Sure, Time Vault is the very far end of that spectrum. And I definitely went through a phase like that when I was a cube builder and a cube creator. And my philosophy at one point in time was, okay, well, if there was ever a deck and it relied on a two card combo to win, that's a really good, you know, two cards to win the game is very strong in Magic. It always has been, it always will be. And the cube environment should be part Magic history lesson, part, you know, most powerful cards in Magic. So it would make sense on those fronts that all those cards should be inside that environment. But instead, what it really became was almost like playing the match game, where it's like, okay, you know, you turn up picture of a heart. Okay, now I'm going to turn up another card. Is it a picture of a heart? Okay, it is. You win. Oh, no, you picked up a picture of a guy with a mustache. It doesn't pair. Okay, we'll try again.
Yeah.
It was about aligning those two-card combos to win, and it became more fun when my cube was that variety to find which two-card combo interactions of Magic's past started to overlap or interact well with other ones, and you could find new ways to win or new card combinations that maybe you hadn't played a bunch in Magic's constructed past or all those cube games where you're like, okay, I got the show and tell into the Blightsteel, or you know, the turn one Phyrexian Colossus will take a key or whatever. You know, stifle my dreadnought, like things like that. Like, instead of doing the things that you thought were the best in Magic's past and were trying to line up specifically, it was about finding the alternate angles. And that became more fun and really challenged people in terms of drafting, deck building, and gameplay.
Yeah, so what size is your main cube even at?
630 cards, so it's on the larger side.
Okay.
When I started, it was around 520. At one point, we ballooned all the way up to 720 so we could run two full 8-man pods. 630 runs an 8-man and a 6-man at full capacity, or we can do 16 people if we shore up the size of the packs. So to me, it's kind of the perfect middle area where we can do two draft pods, we can support kind of the maximum number of players one cube could support, has a lot of variance, but it's not this, you know, super balloon size where you're going to see certain card interactions come up very, very rarely, even though I really like variants. I really like, you know, having to kind of survival man a draft and hodgepodge together something to kind of get you to victory. A cube is still an amalgamation of those two things. You know, it is that bridge between constructed and limited, where you are kind of figuring out how to make the hill giants attack properly really. And at the same time, you're like, oh, I happen to have reoccurring Nightmare Palancron. I guess I just win right now.
Yeah. I guess maybe the last cube question that we'll talk about tonight or ask tonight. The artifact with, you know, the workshop and
Solarian Academy.
Solarian Academy and the show, the guy where you like show two artifacts from your hand to make mana.
Metalworker,
yeah. I noticed like you're not, your cube isn't into that. Is that like a pure gameplay decision, or do you just not have a, you know, like for like a while ago, I was like, oh, I'm glad that's not a cube card, and the card went up by $500, you know, or.
So are you regretting just not owning one for a cube just in case, and now you missed out?
Yeah, like a workshop. I was like, you know, I was like thinking about which cards to buy, and I was like, well, that's not really a cube card. And all of a sudden, it was like a cube card, and it was like, oh, fuck, you know.
Now the thing about those, yeah, I mean, the workshop went up, Metalworker went up a bunch. It's such a shame because I still have Tolarian Academies, because I kept thinking like that was going to be the crux. I was like, well, they're never going to print it again. There's only one printing. It's a reasonable buy-in price right now. So, like, I have a bunch of those, and that card has literally moved the least out of any of those fucking cards at all. Like, it's barely worth. Like, I would have been better off investing in Sarah Sanctums at a third the price I bought Academy at, and then just sitting on those. But to get back to your question about all that kind of like blue or brown fast mana stuff, what I found in the exercise of playing with it, and this extends to like going as far as playing like blue Tezzeret, blue black Tezzeret, kind of like broader artifact strategies or
what
actually.
About myself?
Oh, we're tried. We were just talking about
JR does bring up a really good point. Those are really powerful cards in Magic's history. Those are cards that have gone up a whole lot in the last year or less, and it would be nice to already own a copy so that you didn't have to worry about if you did need to add them to your cube. But I think I could confidently say that you're perfectly fine not owning them, because just like a card like Channel, they're really binary. Like, either they all come together and do this very broken thing, which Cube does plenty already, or they're really bad on their own and they don't do anything. So many games, Metalworker wasn't adding mana. You just didn't have the artifacts. It wasn't generating the effect you wanted to have. And it... Oh, I think he's here.
Whoa!
Yep, I'm in.
He's here, man. And I hear the new addition, too.
Yeah, MPD Dad in full effect right now. Oh,
hell
shit.
Yeah.
Genuine. No filter here. It's Marcel at home.
Marcel at home.
Just getting off work. You know, I do 10 hours and then come home and I got to do another 5 hours here. It's like, man, is this really life? Is this what people get excited about?
This is what life's all about.
When you start considering you're punching in for 5 hours at home, I think you do start to feel the weight of life on you at that point, man. This is supposed to be where you're able to stretch out and relax, even if you're working on... Dude, I fed a baby for the first time last week. It took forever. I was so mad I didn't have my computer next to me. I was like, oh, my God. Like, I had to feed the kid,
It's
like 12 ounces of food. My sister-in-law hands me this little container of, like, whatever the, you know, mixed up mushes that they eat. My newest niece is 8 months old. And I was like, okay, I can get through this. Like, I remember, you know, feeding a kid. And then she hands me two more of these 4 ounce containers. It's like, no, she's actually going to eat all of this. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm going to be here all day. And literally like a guy from the 50s. Like, I got a phone call about work, like 20 minutes into trying to feed this child. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I got to go. I got like 3/4 of one little container in. And by the time my like 15 minute phone call was over and I get back, like, she'd fed the kid all the food. She's like, oh yeah, you just got to jam it in there. You know, they know the drill. Like, as soon as the spoon comes in, mouth goes open. You hit the bottom of the upper, like, upper part of the mouth. They close. The tongue does the rest. Like, don't spill too much on them. And just rinse and repeat. Do the whole thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again.
I cannot wait until TSG has a kid. It's going to be awesome.
Kid is he's the most adult kid that I know.
I know. It's crazy.
Just the ROI, the one day of hanging with an infant, the ROI on it is so insanely low, it feels like. It's just like, I cannot believe how much of my day is devoted to putting food in you and then cleaning it out of you later. Like, it's insane. And it's not like you do it for a little while and then it evolves into the next stage of Pokemon. Like, it stays at that stage for so long that you're like, fuck,
and
man.
It works. Everybody tells me. Everyone I talk to them at work, like, man, this is rough. This is horrible. They'd be like, oh, wait till you have three kids. They're like, oh, wait till they get older. This is actually the best part of it. I'm like, oh, man,
really?
I wish I could.
I think, yeah. The way I think of it is, like, when you're wiping them and they're babies, it's like, well, it's better than, like, them looking at you and asking, like, what you're, you know, like, what are you doing there drinking and what are you doing over yeah. there? You know,
daddy smell when you come from outside all the time.
Like, yeah, exactly. At least at this point, like it is the golden era because at least at this point they can't ask questions. You can make mistakes. You can make mistakes and learn from them. I mean, yeah, it's nerve wracking, but you know when they're that small. But like you can make those mistakes and learn from them, and then like as they get older and start asking questions and wondering what the fuck you're doing. That's when it gets weird.
But I can't wait for that interaction, though. The back and forth is, even though it'll be a child's mind, it's still a mind, and it's a personality and everything. And I'm looking forward to that part. You know,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, until then, man, if anybody, like if you're thinking about having kids or you're young and you want to go see the world, you want to do something with your life, like, you know, babysit for like overnight. And then, you know, you could reevaluate your life after that point.
Yep. It's definitely a thing, man. It takes a lot of skills that you may or may not know you had. It takes a lot of fucking problem solving. It takes a lot of fucking, I guess, just tenacity. It's one of those things, like, you know, you learn it as you go. Everybody does it different, like... You know, one guy can tell you this part's easy, that part's fucking hard. Like, the next guy might tell you something different. It's definitely an experience altogether, though. And I can't wait, though. Like, hearing TSG's little play-by-play on feeding, I cannot wait for TSG to finally have a kid. It's going to be awesome. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not one of those guys that's, oh, I can't wait for you to.
No, I'm not saying you are.
I think it's going to be awesome when you do because I think that's the biggest thing too. I before I had kids, I was like, well, I mean, kids, they're neat and all, but, I mean, I got other shit to do. I think that's the biggest part of it. When they're yours, it's a different story. I mean, yeah, there's those saints out there that are like, oh man, I fucking love them all the same. No, that's not true. I don't love other people's kids like I love mine. Fuck that.
No, I thought you were going to say you don't love your kids the same. No.
I don't even love my kids.
They're at different rates.
Yeah, exactly. There is a difference. You know, I've got a son and a daughter, and I definitely think that there's a huge difference in a lot of areas. But well, there's obviously a difference between them. But just the way I am towards them in different areas is completely different, too, so. But hey, we didn't
Kevin.
Yeah, I know it's fucking weird, huh? we not that we got to introduce you, Marcel, but like we got the fucking the latecomer guest Marcel, and we haven't got to hear from this motherfucker in a long time. So
yeah, buddy, since
obviously,
the crest, I think.
Yeah, since the crest, like you're doing your work right now, dude. You're busting your ass, and you've got the fucking baby. She's fucking, I saw that picture of her today in her Giants garb. It's fucking.
Oh, man. Everyone's like, I thought you were from Oakland. I was like, I am. I'm an A's fan. But my lady, she dresses my baby. So,
yep,
you know, you got to do
it. And that's cool, though. At least you guys have that rivalry in the home.
Yeah, sure. Cool. Yeah.
I lucked out. I introduced my wife to hockey and the Devils, and she's a Devils fan like I am. I don't have to worry about that shit.
Man, you're tweeting so much about hockey. I thought you turned into TSG for a
second. I know.
Second.
It's, like, it's crazy. I fell back in love. Like, I, you know, it, it's one of those things. It's always been a part of my life because I was way into hockey a long time ago. And I played, and then I just got away from it. And then when I got back, like, it's TSG's fault. And literally, it was the crest that did it. Like,
yeah, I remember that when I woke up from hungover, and I'm like, you guys are going over the same game, and TSG's calling plays because the game was from 1996. I'm like, oh my god, they're lost. We're not going shooting tonight.
Yeah, we're not going shooting at all, are we? Yeah, no, I started drinking, and we're watching hockey. And it sparked there, and fucking it's gotten fucking worse and worse for me.
Well, as so, you know, Marcel, you and I firsthand know there's nothing to do in the crest, so it makes perfect sense you would gravitate towards that kind of activity.
Yeah, yeah, watching something that somebody else is doing.
this is true. Yeah. Like, I remember us, like, we were talking about, should we do, you know, SVU, GP, SVU, we got to make it happen. And we're like, I was like, no, we can still do it at the crest. We can still do it. And then you slowly talked me out of it. And now that I thought about it, you know, a month later, I'm like, yeah, we don't want to do that.
We don't want to do GP crest.
That was a one time only.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like maybe one of these days the homies can come visit, you know, again. Like, once you guys finally, you know, are like, oh, it's been long enough, we could probably deal with going back to the crest. The homies could come visit, but hosting a GP of any sort here, or a gathering of any sort here, would just be, man.
The whole town would know, too. They'd be like, oh, shit, we got invaded by magic nerds. What's going on?
Yeah, what's happening right now?
Yeah, but I was saying before, I wouldn't mind like an LA event, but doesn't seem to be Vegas is the thing that's in the cards. It's awesome.
Yeah, Vegas, well, the big thing is that me and Kevy, we had kids, so, like, you know, there goes a lot of motivation behind the force of making stuff happen. And then on top of that, we're gonna have kids at an infant age, so we might have to do something close by. So yes, Vegas is the best place. TSG run that into me. But I was thinking, like, you know, this year, if we try to do Vegas this year, then we burn out for 2017. So I think it's actually good that we didn't do Vegas this year out here.
An off year Vegas kind of thing.
Yeah, we'll find out in August.
Oh no, that's to come back to that though. That's the thing that he was talking about, or that JR was talking about earlier at the beginning of the cast though, is just trying to, maybe not a whole like gathering or anything, but like, you know, like GPLA kind of thing. Getting every, you know, since TSG is going to be down there, and living in LA, and, you know, we're close enough ish to LA. Like, you know, you're on the outskirts on this one, Marcel.
LA's not that hard.
I guess that's the thing. Like, it's easier for you to get to LA than it is for me, because I got to drive to LA. You got to drive to the airport and spend like $60 on Southwest to get to the fucking LA airport.
Time getting to the airport and getting away from the airport than I would actually be flying.
Yeah, no shit, exactly. And it still is. It will still be less time than me to just drive there, and I'm a couple hours away. But yeah, like doing a small gathering of friends at GPLA would be kind of cool, because JR wants to go to LA. JR wants to walk around and see the basically urban decay that is Los Angeles.
That was kind of how it was described, yeah. That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, maybe, like, not, maybe some mushrooms. Like, yeah, that'd be good. I mean, if, like, I had some mushrooms, like, that would be good. Like, not a lot, but.
Down then, damn.
I would go to TSG. We would, like, go to a Dodger game. I might eat some mushrooms beforehand and be like, all right, I'm cool. And then we'd be like, be there at the game. And I'd be like, oh man, there's too many people here. I'm getting
like, oh man, this whole thing was kind of like JR's idea, but he got lost in Los Angeles. So now this has turned into a disaster.
There's too many people here. I need to take a walk. So I'm just going to take a walk from fucking Dodger Stadium, go out, walk through Hollywood. I'm going to fucking walk to Venice Beach from Dodger Stadium and just go on a walk.
That's a long walk.
Yeah, but I might be up for it, you know.
that's a really long walk. And
yeah, that's
through some shady fucking neighborhoods.
It's like crossing 4 freeways. I mean, you definitely will get a lot of rich culture. But yeah. No, I'm only going to be like 7.5 miles from Dodger Stadium. So that is very doable. And then we'll drive to the beach. How about that?
So this is in May?
Right. Yeah, it's like May 20th or something. Like it's super soon.
I'm not saying that. Like that's like we yeah, I'm not saying that. Like that's
what do you mean?
That ship has sailed, I'm I not think. That.
Oh, you can't make it.
But I'm saying
in future, if we get a future GPLA, we got to make that happen. Or how about we just do like a pre-release in LA? And you know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, that like, once, that turned into GP Press. But yeah, if we get more serious about it, I think I'd
there's
work
also
out.
I know like there's like BlizzCon. I mean, you know, when Spivey was on the cast, like there's BlizzCon in LA, Anaheim, technically in I don't know November or something.
That's actually feasible. That's real
feasible.
Yeah, like
that could
actually.
Be like a you know like a kernel of an event. Like just that.
Yeah,
like,
and we don't even
have
to go.
Yeah,
I don't even have to go to BlizzCon. I'll just go to LA because everyone will be there, and then we can just go there, and we could just do how we do the GPs because I don't care about Hearthstone enough to go to a BlizzCon. Yeah, no. But yeah, if you want
to
gather there, that sounds good.
You'd just be like around the stuff.
I don't need tickets. I work conventions. I could get in anywhere pretty much. All you got to do is just you know. Look like you're supposed to be there, and you could pretty much get your. Wait, what am I saying? It's on air. Hold up. Stuff that you shouldn't know. All you got to do is have a clipboard, and then you know, look like you have some authority, and people will never question you.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, man, you're in the union. Just you know, say they barred you from your local. You're working their local, and no one's gonna fucking ask you.
Professionally, that's not. It could. If I were to have something happen. It would just look really bad and probably cost me money that I don't want to spend. It's not worth it. But, you know, there's ways that I could work around without having to do so. But anyway, so how you guys are enjoying Magic right now? What do you guys think of it? I'm sure you already discussed the bannings and all this good chunk and nasty stuff.
We talked about the Magic the Gathering. We talked about draws being worth 0 points. We talked about... fucking Puka trade being hella awkward right now for everybody. We talked about the BNR updates. We talked about MTGO taking away the replay information and how that's going to affect stuff. What did we not talk about this week is a much better question.
We didn't talk about I just left and went and got a drink, so if I missed anything, I'm sorry.
We talked about way more Magic than we usually do on this show.
Okay, so I'm not going to do anything of Magic talking at this point. There's no reason for that.
Yes!
It's all downhill. So are you guys deep in the Twitter hole now?
Well, no, we hadn't. Like that's why it was perfect timing. We were winding down on the Magic topics. It was like, this was it, the bottom of the barrel. And then I was writing you to be like, oh, hey, man, are you around? Are you going to be able to make it? And you wrote me, and you said, add me. I was like, there's nothing more perfect than that. It's time to go... like straight into the Twitter hole, and that's when Marcel shows up. It's like he knows. He's got a fucking radar. He's like, I don't want to fucking talk about Magic. Magic is stupid. I don't want anything to do with it. I'm just here for the fucking Twitter hole. And he showed up like right on time.
There we go. while we're here, go check out. So we got the Heavy Beta SVU clan going strong over in Clash Royale. It's a game that it's like a real time strategy game mixed with trading card elements.
You basically
play troops, you know, at a speed, and you play it on the board, and you play against it. Well, we started up, was it Basic Lands, the guy that did the Heavy Meta hoodies?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Johnny Montana. So he started the clan and then pumped it out there. And now we got a bunch of people, a lot of people from the SDU, like Les. Arizuka's doing really good. I can't remember everybody by
Damn
name.
It. Now I might have
so we got it. Yeah.
Motherfucker.
Yeah, so check it out. It's Clash Royale. It's a pretty, it's a free game, but it's made by the people that did Clash of Clans. So be very careful about spending money. You know, they try to siphon your pockets, but you're going to spend a little bit. It's good to grease the wheels. So like, you know, $10 will get you in something cool. It's a fun game, but yeah, the SDU is definitely represented there.
I've been kind of looking for a fucking game to play lately because I got, like, I went through the like MTG puzzle quest thing and I like was into it for a little while. I was like, oh yeah, it's kind of cool. You know, it's fun to play and like it's a little bit different. Just like a little fucking on the shitter game. And then I got over it. It might be a new game for me to get into. I have to check it out. It's not like fucking Candy Crush, is it?
No.
Yeah,
you can make it like Candy Crush. If you want to spend thousands of dollars, they'll let you funnel it all into their pocket. So
yeah, no
don't
shit.
Be an idiot. It's not gonna make the game fun.
Now the only downside is like this is the biggest problem I run into with like mobile games where I just like want to kick back and fucking you know just kind of mindlessly fuck around and like everybody does like play you know a little fucking quick time fucking game on their fucking phone. And the only time I ever get into that mood is like when I'm at work. And like, well, like today, for instance, was one of those days, like quick side day where I didn't have shit all to do. I had to drive, like we had to drive equipment all the way up to one end of our fucking, from one end of our rail to the other. And then we had to drop off some ties and then drive back down. But it literally took up the entire 8-hour day of sitting in equipment, not doing shit. And like, but
that's what the phone's for, keep your sanity.
Exactly. But half the problem is about halfway up our line, we lose service altogether. So it's like, I always like at that point, I'm like, fuck, I guess I'm playing fucking NHL 2K or Angry Birds because I have to have like play something that I like don't have to have fucking internet access for. So, but for those other times, I might have to check this game out. What was it called again?
Clash Royale.
I might have to fucking check it out.
Yeah.
All right.
And another game. One more game.
Ahead.
I'm gonna.
No, go ahead.
It's like I'm getting paid on here. Heavy metal.
Yeah, there's shit.
You know, but Enter the Gungeon. If you like, you know, Binding of Isaac or like Nuclear Throne, this is a well polished, very fun game in a similar kind of dungeon crawler. And it just came out on the 4th or the 5th. And I saw this at TwitchCon, and I got to put my hands on it at TwitchCon. I was very excited about the game. That was back like in November. And it finally came out, so I got that, and it's really good. So if you want a good game, it's like $15 for the game, but you know you'll get your money out of that for sure. If you're for one draft, you can get a game that's going to give you a lot more value than that draft.
Right on. Well, shit. While we're talking about it, there's a game that I like to fucking play on fucking my phone called Card Crawl. What's that? I don't know if you guys have ever fucked with it at all. Like a buddy of mine turned me onto it. Like a dude that. Daniel brought over to play Magic one time. Like he's a good friend of his. Brought over to play Magic one time. We've kind of got to be friends a little bit through there. And we're sitting there at a wedding one night. He's like, dude, you got to play this fucking game. And it's kind of a one of those like the opponent has a deck that he starts dealing out, and you have to kind of whittle your way through his entire deck. Like you know the cards basically add or subtract as it's going along. It's a very basic game. The art to it's kind of cool, and it's just a fun little like dick around game that's like extremely fucking addictive. But it's called just Card Crawl. You should check that out, Marcel. You might dig it.
And that's like a tabletop, or is it?
It's just like a little phone app, fucking game, like iPhone fucking app game. I don't know if it's on Android or not because I don't pay attention to that shit. but yeah, just Card Crawl, and it's fucking. Was it Unity? Does it? I was trying to pull it up. Yeah. Company called Unity does it, but that's like my favorite fucking game to play on my phone. So
anybody's got tips, yeah, like tweet at me, tell me games. I need to find more games on my phone, and the best way to get it is recommended from other people. So the SBU, if you
have
reach
somebody
out to us,
have somebody else spend the money or not even the money or just the time to figure out whether it was worth fucking downloading. Be like, fuck this game, or this is awesome. That should be like a new segment on fucking Heavy Meta, just fucking mobile games. But we'll only do it every time Marcel shows up.
I'm not even that much of a gamer either. Whatever.
Well, neither am I.
JR's just like, man, stop this right now. I'm going to shoot myself in the head.
The first time I was ever on you. Did you guys get any salmon ball in terms of GD Gress?
Oh.
We did. We got our footage. We actually got a game. right before Gubby fell over and like went into complete berserk mode. But, yeah, we got most of it. I think we have a winner. I think someone actually won one game, and we played one game, and we didn't get further than that. But you know, we need more Santa Ball.
I had some people over one night that I because you left the croquet set here or the salmon ball set here for me. I finally got like Daniel and two guys that he brought over that he knew one night, like to play salmon ball, which is really awkward because like, you know, Daniel is my brother-in-law and he knows heavy meta and he kind of knows what's going on. These other guys were, you know, random friends of his, you know, somewhat gamer nerds. And then like, not only are they walking into the dungeon, and it, like, it's kind of off-putting because, like, most of the guys Daniel's introduced me to that, you know, play Magic, like, through him are guys that, like, he played, you know, some kitchen table Magic with, you know, in high school or after high school. And, you know, they've been friends or you know, they're gamer kids. They've dabbled in Magic a little bit. And they're like, oh, yeah, I've got this one deck. Or, like, I play a little bit here and there. I've got some cards. And then they show up here. And there's like playmats on the walls and there's the heavy meta playmat and there's cards everywhere. And there's like just this whole heavy meta thing going on. And then there's this drunk tattooed asshole like, come on in, let's play some Magic. And they're like, what the fuck is going on? And then like, you know, halfway through our first game, I'm like, you guys need to understand this game because this is important. And then I start trying to teach them salmon ball in the middle of it. Like it didn't go over well. I feel like there needs to be some sort of premise to it. Like, to just, like, I don't know, attack people with the idea of salmon ball doesn't work really well. I tried that angle. Yeah. It doesn't work well. So
that's what I was getting at. I think you need, like, a good course. Like, I don't know what it's like down in the crest, but I imagine it's very flat. Like, I think you need, like, more of, like, a hilly terrain. Like,
yeah, well, shit, we were doing this in my terrible backyard, too. But yeah, you know, like there's places here you could do it, but it would take like going there. You know, it's like, we could be like, oh, hey, let's go do some salmon ball up the college or at the park or something.
But that's not the same. That's not the same doing it in your house.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of got to have the right yard for it to introduce people to it.
Yeah. Cause one will get you a drinking in public ticket and one won't. Going to jail is not conducive to playing multiple games of standard ball.
I mean, like the first salmon ball, like mugshot we get, like I'm going to be proud of whoever it is. It might be me. I'll be proud of myself. Like if somebody like actually has a mugshot, they're like, I went to jail for drunk in public because I was playing salmon ball, like, you know, at the park or in the street and we had cocktails because we're following the rules. And, like, I'm going to be proud yet disappointed because like, they should have just let us go with it. Nobody should be getting arrested for this, but. No. Anyway.
Nor do we encourage anybody else to get tickets because they can ruin your life.
Yeah.
No matter how cool we'll think they are, you know.
Yeah, it's no bueno. just do it in your backyard. Just do it in your backyard or a publicly sanctioned, like, open drinking place. Now, the Vegas Strip might be a thing. Because you could drink on the Strip without getting arrested. Like, we may have to, like, maybe we'll get some, like, Vegas Strip salmon ball.
Mexico.
We could go to Mexico.
Go to Mexico, play salmon ball on the beach, and have drinks brought to us.
That's
the way to go.
That's true too, because then you're not dealing with strip traffic. I mean, I feel like that's like a whole different obstacle. Like it's a different like level of the game, like different obstacles. Like you could do like beach salmon ball in Mexico. This almost seems like a fucking PlayStation game to me.
I have no idea what the infrastructure per se is like in Mexico. It could be catastrophically bad, for all I know.
It could be.
the infrastructure, per se.
Yeah, Kevin Metal running around in Mexico with a wooden mallet while drinking and being, like, enticed to drink. I'm just afraid of Mexico in general. Like, I don't want to go to Mexico because I'm always, like, my wife has brought up quite a few times, like, hey, you know, we need to take a cruise. We need to go on a cruise. Cruises are cheap. Like, we've talked to, like, Jerome and Karen, like, our friends about it. Like, hey, let's fucking go on a cruise to Mexico. I don't want to go to Mexico. I'm afraid to go to Mexico because I'm afraid that I will get arrested for something and not make it back. And I'm not spending fucking any time in a Mexican prison. Like, everybody in the town is going to die before I fucking spend time in a Mexican prison. So I'm, like, actually afraid. Like, I am afraid of snakes. I'm afraid to go to Mexico because I'm afraid of not coming back. And everybody tells me, like, yeah, but when you go on, like, a cruise, you stop in, like, the, like, I guess, Americanized, like, spots where you're just kind of there in that little spot where, like, it, you know, like, Ensenada and shit like that where it's, like, it's basically an American city in Mexico, and as long as you don't go venturing off on your own, like, you know, you'll be fine. you don't have to worry about anything. But, you know, I don't know. Like, Marcel, you've gone on vacation in Mexico. Is that how it rolls? Like, or is there some shady shit you got to worry about?
I mean, there is definitely cartel shit there. You just got to stay within your envelope. That's all I can say.
Well, that's the kind of shit that, like, that reassures me that I do not want to go to Mexico. Like,
yeah, it could be bad for your health. But see, Kevin, if you go with people that could semi-control you or guide you like a meandering river.
Like a handler.
You know?
Like,
yeah, if you had a handler, you may be okay.
Yeah, that might be okay, and I don't know.
We keep you on the resort. We won't let you go past the resort. Or like, exactly. You know, have a shock. We put a shock collar on you. And we'd set it up.
Just keep me in the resort, or just give me that stern warning when I get off the boat. Be like, oh, if you leave the resort, your drink bracelet is no good anymore. And then and then you don't even need a shock collar. I'll be like, oh shit, I'm not leaving this fucking room.
Yep, that I mean, that is true though. If you get the all inclusive, your drinks are there at the hotel.
Yeah, so why would you want to leave? You know, but of course, like Sometimes you get fucked up, you want to go on an adventure. And like, you know, grown up and I live in the United States, I'm used to, you know, being fairly safe. Like, I mean, yeah, we could get into a whole conversation, but like pretty fucking safe. Like I could go walking around and like, oh, worst's going to happen, I'm going to end up fucking going to jail for the night for drunk in public. And yet, like, you know, go to Mexico, that might not be the worst that's going to happen. You might not be able to get back in the country, which scares me.
But that's the same for you going to Canada, you know, so that's going to happen one day. So
yeah, but
Mexico's
not
that bad.
See, that's the difference is, like, if they're like, oh, you can't get back in the U.S., you're stuck in Canada forever. I'll be like, all right, you know, end of story. Like, okay, like, I'll send for my family. I'll get them up here. I'll just stay, I guess. Whereas Mexico, I don't know, I'd be a little more afraid. And maybe that's just because the only place in Mexico I've ever been is Tijuana, so I'm afraid of it. Like,
Tijuana's not the best.
That might
not
be the
Mexico.
Best representation of Mexico. Like, you know, I don't know, I'm afraid of Mexico because the shit you hear is like, you ain't coming back. You're gonna spend forever in Mexican prison.
Yeah, we're going to spend forever if we don't get down this Twitter hole. So
yeah, we
got to
get
on that
Twitter hole. So,
ESG, you're the man. You're the one that reads the questions the best. You're most elegant of us all. Can you start this off right?
I might be able to. I'm not usually the guy with the questions. I don't actually have
that's
a
Hearthstone. I'm in the middle of playing a game right now. Why'd you bother me?
I'm actually re-sleeving the cube for its trip to Josh for the GP in Toronto.
Oh. Are you shipping it off to Josh?
I am.
That's
how we're
awesome.
Going to have it for the festivities there.
That is fucking sweet.
That is awesome. Best use of the cube.
Goddamn.
Get it around.
Get it to everybody. I'm trying.
I gotta get those nasty Marcel doesn't like them sleeves off there and put on those new face-to-face sponsor sleeves that I've been sitting in my box since for months now, and get out there and show support.
Wow, I was in a topped off for a call. Josh is shipping the cube to Toronto. That's awesome.
Fuck yeah, we gotta get and that's the thing is like I mean that whole fucking that whole cube is like. You know, for TSG to be able to take his cube around to the SVU and to these events to be able to be able to play it without him having to worry about the ridiculous amount of money that is in his cube. And then it became this goddamn legend on its own. So, you know, TSG's only one man, and he's only one man that went to film school and is now moving from fucking Oakland to L.A., to pursue his film dreams. So he doesn't have time to make it to all the GPs. So like doing shit like this, like shipping it to a trusted fucking friend. I mean, especially the guy that made it in the first fucking place for everybody to be able to play it is probably the best way for this cube to go about. I fucking love it. And TSG, I am currently trying. I mean, you know how good I am at the internet. I'm currently trying to ship you the spreadsheet, whatever it's called. I think Bruce gave me shit for that.
Whole spreadsheet.
Yeah, the Twitter hole spreadsheet.
We do have a backlog of them. It's just, Bruce is going to yell us about this for later, I'm sure.
I just sent it to our Twitter conversation because that was the easiest, quickest way I could think to do it right now.
Well, I had Bruce, a good idea to chat you.
What's that?
We're going to discuss that. It's cool. I'll pick it up.
Oh, it was like the just same go. Thing just happened. What, Marcel?
I think you guys should have an account that people tweet at and then just have the password to that account so you can log in and you get all the mentions.
Well,
and then you don't have to fucking go through this whole process.
Well, that's the thing. We have, like, dude, no, like, Bruce Lee, our fucking historian, fucking record keeper, whatever we want to call him, the dude's got it locked down. He's got this sweet-ass fucking, and he gives me shit because I call it a spreadsheet, but like Google Doc, of, like, the Twitter hole in its entirety, like, fucking, like, past, like, a backlog of questions. It's like a constant running thing. The problem is, he was giving me shit about this today. He's like, yeah, he can't ever seem to fucking find it. I think he just posted it publicly today. He's like, hey, yeah, here's the fucking link to it, because Kevy seems to can't find it every fucking, so every time we do exactly what we're doing right now, so, oh, it's the Twitter hole. Oh, I got to go find the fucking Google Doc and all that shit and find the address. And, like, this time I'm just passing it off. So I have to find a way to get it to somebody else. But, like, it's just, like, an open thing where he's just like, oh, yeah, you guys can put your Twitter hole questions here, too, and just add them to the Google Doc. Now, TSG, did you get it?
I'm opening it as we speak.
Yes.
Are you ready for this GP New York? How's that going down? Are you going to even show up, or are you just going to be like, fuck it, I'm not going to Jersey?
Honestly,
I'm not going to Jersey.
It's all about GP Toronto. That's like a week before, right? So that was the whole way they fucked up the schedule. You know, and you remember that too. Like, it fucked up your schedule too, Marcel, where they like...
Yeah. I would have made it to August, the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it was in August, I'd be out there partying with you guys. I really, really wanted that, and Wizards took the one thing I wanted here.
For me, at this point, Toronto is, like, the main event, and New York is catch as catch can. Like, I'm sure, like, a lot of cool people will be around, you know, whatever. But I'm not planning, per se, for New York at all. I'm just planning for Toronto at this point.
That's completely fair. I didn't know they were back-to-back like that. Yeah, there's no reason. There's no reason. That sucks, though.
Yeah.
Man. Whatever.
No, this might be common knowledge. Like, I haven't paid enough attention to this before, like, as far as the GP schedule goes. Like, is that something that they do? Like, are they kind of in a rotation, or is it more randomized every year? Like, you know, when they announce the GP, like, cities, for the most part, they're in the same fucking cities every year, but is it like, oh, just completely random, like we're going fucking over here this week, then this
week? Some cities are repeats every year. Some cities are like rotation.
Well, yeah,
once in a while.
You have like the GP Vegas, so they're, you know, doing that, but that's kind of a special circumstance. It's like, oh, well, like the one in fucking New York is always after the one in Toronto, or...
It's all random. I don't know how they figure that. I think what they do is they take a dartboard and they just put the names on there.
Say,
and they take a bunch of darts and throw it one at a time.
That sounds about right. No, that's good, though.
Because they'll have Vegas in the middle of summer, and then they'll do Toronto in the middle of the winter, and then they'll have, Seattle in the middle of November, and it's like, you know, get the worst weather, like they didn't even plan it.
Did they just stick to that? And they're like, okay, now we're doing it that way every year. I don't give a fuck what the weather's like. Or do you maybe get a different one? Because, like, that's a thing that, like, I'm curious about, just because of the timing. Like, I've seen people run into me. I don't go to a lot of GPs. It's a huge pain in the ass because I got to drive 3 hours just to get on a plane to go to one. But, like, I see a lot of other people dealing with that shit, like, being like, oh, well, I have this and then that one. And, like, you guys were just talking about, like, you know, dealing with fucking the back-to-back GPs. It's like, oh, shit, well, is that something that you're going to have to deal with all the time because they're always close together? Or is that something that maybe, like, next year might be different?
You have a lot of questions, Kevy.
I know I do.
Too many questions.
It's because I'm drinking. Like, and I'm drinking and I'm curious. I have a thirst for knowledge.
You're talking about
knowledge!
You're talking to the new guy who's got an infant, who the last thing he's thinking about doing is traveling to different events right now.
No shit.
You talk about useless knowledge. He's going to learn all this. We're going to teach him. And then by the time he actually goes about using it, he's going to have to ask again.
Exactly. It's the booze that does it.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good. That's why I want to get you on the Twitter hole. You got so much energy. You got so much spunk.
I know, so much tenacity.
Let's get it going.
All right.
Come on, guys.
Let's try to get a few of these in before Marcel's got to go feed a child for half an hour and Kevy's going to hit his bedtime because the sun's going to be down.
Yeah.
All right. Keeping it relevant to Innistrad, we've got from Zach Allen, you've just been bitten by a werewolf. What is the first thing you do as a new canine?
Ooh. Hmm.
I go eat a cow. Raw.
Just fucking. That's a real good Marcel answer for that, too. You're like, oh, man, like, I love food, and I got to experience, you know, like, you love steak. You got to experience it in every different way, and that's probably.
Yeah, the most carnal way possible. Yeah. You know, you're just going to tear right in, just go for it, just feel like the complete savage that you can be, and it'll be socially acceptable. That's the best part about it, so,
mm-hmm.
You know. There's no scorn about digging into a raw cow.
Damn, that's
who knows? That could be the
good. That's good. I have a good one.
Answer. What do you got?
I would lie down and like lie down in a coil and crack my back and have a good back crack and just like lie down in a tight coil as a dog. Oh, that'd be good.
Oh god.
That's the most JR answer I heard. I couldn't expect anything better.
I feel like just the basic go around and harass people. Like, just be a werewolf. Like, be an asshole. Go out and just be a dick. Be like, oh, what the fuck are they going to do? Like, you know, it's not like I'm going to get in trouble for this. Like, you know, maybe go to a highly populated area and just go start some mayhem.
Yeah, because you're going to get shot dead. Like, I mean, think about it. People go freak out about zombies and all this. The moment they see a werewolf going around terrorizing, like, your lifespan's about 12 hours, so you might as well just go on a rampage.
No, not necessarily. And really go. That's the thing, is because, like, everybody now, like, all these fucking, you know, all the doomsday preppers and shit are ready for the zombie apocalypse. They, you know, they've all got all the fucking, they've got it down. They, you know, you got to shoot them in the head, you got the ammunition for it, like, we're going with the, you know, the, like, how many people out there have silver bullets, and how long is that really going to take somebody to be like, oh shit, we're going to have to, like, silver bullet this motherfucker? Somebody's going to have to cast a fucking bullet, and, you know, like, somebody that's into reloading is going to have to cast a silver, like, I figure I got, like, days or not weeks of rampage.
You got a good point there. They're not going to be ready. There may be a couple people out there ready with some silver bullets. I'm sure there probably is.
There's got to be somebody out there that's like, oh, I don't believe this zombie infestation everybody's worried about. I think the werewolves are going to be the problem. And, like, there might be some guys out there, but, like, they're going to have to fly them in from fucking, I don't know, Arkansas or wherever. And, like, I'm just going to be wreaking havoc in Vegas. And then I could just, like, you know, I'm a werewolf. I just fucking run off into the fucking night. And then, like, it's Vegas. I mean, that's probably the best place for it, because I can go raise hell, and then I just run off into the night, and then, you know, the whole classic, like, oh, you wake up in the morning, and I'm just laying there in my tattered clothes, all fucked up looking, and they're like, oh, it's Vegas. Like, that's, like, heavy metal
exactly.
In Vegas.
You could just stroll back into town, they wouldn't even draw no attention at all.
I could, like, literally walk down the strip like that, and people would be like, oh man, that guy had a fucking, must have had a bachelor party last night. And just do it all over again the next night.
Or you just have a can and just ask for change, and people pretty much leave you alone the entire stroll.
I could fund my werewolf experience in Vegas, like, just with a can during the day and then just wrecking people at night. I like it. I think that's what I would do. TSG, do you have an answer to this one?
I think I would work on...
Wait.
It'd be kind of nice to be able to run on all fours, so I'd be into working on having, like, a sub-6-minute mile, be able to,
Oh, man. This question...
Really knock out that daily, like, jog really quickly. And also, like, while you're out there, you know, no one's going to stop you from just, you know, squatting down, taking a shit, and you don't have to worry about cleaning it up or anything, because, you know, who's going to stop you?
I love how this question, literally, like, without prompting, just brought out every one of our personalities, like, perfectly.
Perfectly.
That was.
I don't think he could have been scripted. As you said, he had the best part of it. I just heard that at the tail end. Just going to take a shit in public.
Yeah.
There's no shame.
Just rolling out and being like, yeah.
And somebody's going to pick it up for you.
Yeah. Somebody's just like, somebody's going to be disgruntled and be like, oh, some people don't know how to take care of their pets, and go pick it up for you anyway. Like, oh, that's awesome. All right, well, I think it's well answered.
All right, this is also a good question. I forgot.
Wait, whoa. What, JR?
What was the question? I forgot.
Yes.
You've been bitten by a werewolf. What is the first thing you do when you turn into a new canine?
I don't care about that one.
All right. Next question. This is from Ron.
I'm also pretty sure he already answered this question.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. This is from Ron at Damage Direct. If you were to name a sandwich after a magic card, what would it be and what would be on the sandwich?
Ooh.
Whoa.
All
right.
Goblin Pile Driver. And every type of meat you could possibly fucking think of. Like, no vegetables, just all meat. Like, maybe some cheese for garnish, and just all meat, and it would just be a goblin pile driver. Like, it's super fucking red, and you just have to pile drive it down your throat.
I'd probably get a chub toad. You know, it'd be a sandwich so fat that you couldn't finish it in one sitting. So you, if you did, you'd be labeled the chub toad, and
the chub toad.
No one could have tagged you.
I like it. Either of you other gentlemen have an answer on this one?
There are just so many magic cards to choose from. I don't want to do it wrong.
Thing in the ice.
The whole
frozen sandwich.
Gotta go.
Thing in the ice. You probably do like a ravenous baboons. And then it would be similar to like a hot Elvis, where you have to have like bananas in it.
Okay, you didn't sell me on that one. You gotta go.
I'm just trying to think of something that's like on theme. I mean, what else could we do?
Yeah, it's not a lot of good ones. Echoing Truth, maybe. I don't know.
I think this is showing the lack of our brain power being able to pull cards. This is actually a difficult. This is something that would probably be good if we spent like a few minutes searching some cards. But
I mean, I think if we remembered the card we were talking about, we would hit it. But I don't even remember the card we're talking about. Five personally,
Marcel, right. You're gonna make a sandwich and name it after a magic card. What would you make it?
Marcel? Marcel already did.
I don't know. I just said the chub toad. I'm sorry. I'm hitting a brick wall right here. I'm looking at cards, too, on MTG Goldfish. And
chub toad is a toad.
Kozilix Return. That could be a good one. You know, it could be the sandwich so hot.
I don't want my
hot.
Sandwich returning.
It's going to return on you, buddy. It's coming out the back end, and it's going to burn. It's going to do 3 damage to all creatures.
I'm going... If we gotta go again, I'm going thing in the ice, and it's an ice cream sandwich. And I really haven't thought it through past there. But, like, I feel like something cool could have, like, I don't know, maybe a bunch of cookies and shit with ice cream in the middle, but, like, I don't know, you find something, like, there's a prize inside. Like, it's like a Cracker Jack box.
I just want to make a whole menu of just, like, magic-related sandwiches, which I'm sure you could do. Yeah. Like, I want to make, like, classics. Like, have a Dirkwood Boar's and have it be, like, pulled pork or something like that. There are a lot of options. Like, you know in the Bay Area, Marcel, you know, like, Ike's sandwiches?
Yes.
I love Ike's.
Yeah,
Ike's
I keep picturing something like that, but for magic cards, where, like, there's a whole menu of, like, 50 different sandwiches named after magic cards. I think that'd be kind of cool.
I think, and what's cool about, like, with magic, like, you could go quite a while without getting too, like, diluted and just contrived. Like, you could just, there's so much rich magic history and like card names, like you could make it damn near every, if you really sat down and thought about it, you make like all sort of, like, a whole menu full of sandwiches that are just magic card names and make them work. They might not all be perfect, but they might work.
Well, let's try something different. All right,
what
then.
Do we got? We got next.
Matt Hansen, would you rather fuck Jar Jar Binks or an Ewok?
Ew. I mean, like, if you have
an Ewok,
I don't know. If you have to, yeah, that's what I was thinking. If you really got to break it down, you got no choice. Jar Jar Binks or an Ewok. Like, I feel like Jar Jar Binks would be a bit more slippery. Might be nice. Ewoks are going to be furry. That might be nice in a different situation. Like, I don't know, you know, furry, like, huggy, cuddly, like, I don't know. I think I'd, if I'm going to fuck one of them, it's probably going to be Jar Jar Binks.
The thing is, Jar Jar Binks is going to talk back to you. You got to listen, and God forbid it's having a bad day or something, and you got to interact with it. Where the Ewok is, there's no language there that you got to communicate on.
Some yub nub. Yeah, except for the part where it didn't say where you have to fuck them. Like, you know, you could eliminate the conversation and go with the whole, you know, slippery, slimy type creature, you know, in one fell swoop. You just put it in his mouth, I guess, and, you know, just roll it from there. You know, he could do it. It's just like and all over it. Like it
there is an impressive ton on that Jar Jar Binks. I will give you that.
Yeah. And where, like, and also, like, I'd feel terrible fucking an Ewok. Like, I would not feel bad at all fucking Jar Jar Binks. Like,
this grunge fuck. This,
yeah. Like, yeah. Fuck you. Yeah.
It's a really tough choice. Like,
physically,
I'm not into that
metaphorically.
Prepared.
Yeah. No, I like this is all kind of prefaced by the fact that, like, we're not into that shit. But, like, if you got to make a choice, I'm saying Binks is the way to go.
You make a strong argument. I think the force is with you.
Oh, God. Yeah. How are you weighing in on this, JR? Jar Jar and Ewok, man.
Oh, I mean,
is it just too much?
I would not want to just be involved with Jar Jar, I guess. Like,
relationship wise,
or yeah, just together. Not. That's being involved with him would just be too much of a too much.
Too much of a fucking headache. You might as well just, like, yeah. You know, I guess, you know, in its simplicity, like, that's a thing too, though. You know, like, if you gotta pick one of these two, like, it, as much as, you know, it might suck to have to bang an Ewok, then in that world, like, Jar Jar doesn't exist, isn't around, so you don't even have to deal with it whatsoever. Like, it might be that bad that, like, taking the low road and, like, fucking an Ewok would be better just because then Jar Jar Binks isn't there. Now, if the question were worded like, you know, like the other one is sitting there fucking bullshitting in your ear the whole time, like then, you know, maybe that's different. But, you know, the way the question's worded, you just got to fuck one of them. Doesn't, like, so you could get rid of the other one, essentially, by eliminating them.
Yeah. I actually have a question of, so, like, oh. I mean, like, we all like porn, like, everyone here, I don't know about
you. We like porn. We're grown-ups here. Yes.
Like,
it's getting better.
I have to say, it is kind of strange that, like, it's completely standard in porn videos that, like, and people complain about a lot of stuff on the internet, on Twitter, but, like, why is it just like 100%, like almost like 100% of the time, like the ending of a porn video is a guy coming on a girl's face? Like, I get it, but that's kind of weird. Like,
that's just it. That's, well, like,
it's
that's
weird
just
that
the normal thing.
Get it, and it's weird. Wouldn't you not get it? Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, but it's just weird. I feel like people.
What's
I'm
weird
saying,
about
I get
it?
It
but, What are you struggling with this?
The thing I'm struggling with is, like, people aren't complaining about this on Twitter every day. Like, do these, like, I guess they just don't see this porn. Like, I feel like people would be outraged if they knew that, like, 100% of porn involved, like, dudes coming, like dead on on your face, like, at the end of the porn. Like, they'd be like...
No, I get what you're saying. Like,
but a majority of porn is made for men, and we are the number one consumers of porn. And so that's a male fantasy.
No,
that,
I don't even know if that's a male fantasy. Even that's what
I think there it is to an extent. Like, if you're talking like a blanket statement of like in general, like men, yeah, like they're into that. Like that, you know, you gotta include not just us and then the people we know and the people that they know, but like every backwoods fucking asshole that's only got to touch a butt once or twice in their life. Like that's their fucking thing. They're just all, oh yeah, fuck them. I just want to fuck. And maybe it's a fucking thing of power. I don't know. But
it is also funny because
what's that?
Because the girls get paid. Like Netflix. They got this documentary called Hot Girls Wanted, and it's a depressing, you know, documentary on porn and how young girls get exploited and, you know, basically ruin their lives for not that much money, and just how abusive the industry actually is. And it's like, it's pretty bad, you know, but it's like an extra $100. You get the cum shot in your face, you get an extra $100. So that's why they do it. It's like, they'll take the money.
Yeah. And then there's like guys that like seeing that, which, you know, it seems to be the majority of, like, JR's got a point in the fact, like, the majority of porn does tend to end like that. And like the majority out there. And so, like, that must be a thing. That must be a thing that,
like,
yeah,
it's just
caters to an audience.
That's like a thing. It's just like all the time, like all of, like 80% of the time, it's just like.
But like, you know, I think like to your original point,
but really,
the fact that
really
it's not.
How large is your sample size here? That's what I have to know. I mean, I have to get the answer.
How large is my sample size of pornography, sir?
you challenged me?
How deep?
Yeah.
How many gigabytes or terabytes?
Yeah.
I mean, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I just like when you throw out a number like 80%, I mean, like, I just want to know.
That's probably.
Like, aren't a lot of these things broken down by category these days? I mean, if Pornhub has told us anything, it's that they publish data all the time about popular search results and what people are looking for.
Yeah.
But I mean, how hard is it to like tack on, you know, the cum shot at the end of a porn shoot? You're already there. You made most of the work. You did all that there. It's like the end. That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
And people will pay for it.
That's the thing,
you know,
too, is like, that's one of those things. It's not like they're just fucking, like, especially in this day and age where you're not, like, buying a video of the whole fucking thing going on. It's all clips and shit nowadays anyway. So they're like, oh, hey, let's do this for 10 minutes. Let's do that for 10 minutes. Let's do this for 20 minutes. Let's come on her face, and then let's do this some more afterward. We'll bring in another dude, whatever. I mean, shit, we got the lights and the camera set up. That's the expensive part. Like, you know,
that's the lowest common denominator. You can hit. You can. It's like getting a movie that hits every angle and try to
exactly.
Kill the most
and then you just break it off.
And as
three
JR said
clips.
Earlier, he doesn't even need lights. JR doesn't even like lights.
JR doesn't like a well lit porn. He likes it to be like dungy and gritty.
I know. The one thing recently is just like the shaved. Like, I think I can't. Like the shaved epidemic. The shaved epidemic is so bad. Like,
I'm not a fan of that either.
Like, 10 years
I'm not a
ago,
fan of
like,
Bush, but I'm not a fan of the say, Shane.
Yeah. Like, 10
so
years ago, it was like one out of three. It's just like, you can't even find any, like, landing. Like, it's like nothing anymore. It's just, I want something to, like, break up the monotony of the skin. I don't know.
There's quite a lot of them that, like, dye it and shit now. Like, they'll leave a little patch and then they just dye it different colors or put it in different shapes. Like, I'm pretty sure that, like, that's one thing, like, you know, porn has done it for everybody. Like, there's something for everybody out there. There's something for the most depraved, fucked up person. There's something for the most fucking, I don't know, straight and narrow that still wants to watch people fucking. Like, there's something for everybody in porn. Like,
yeah,
wizards could probably take a few cues from the porn industry.
I had a coworker come up to me like, Marcel, I saw you in a porno. And I was like, you know, he's a funny guy like that. I was like, yeah. He's like, no, I'm serious.
Not for real.
I saw you in the porno. You're in the audience. You're sitting in the background. I was like, oh shit, yeah, you did actually, because they got this.
Oh,
they got this place called the Armory out here where they do like pornos and stuff. And my lady, she knows someone that works there, so we were actually audience to the Ultimate Submission or something. And I was like, damn, I was actually in a porno. Isn't that
that's
a bitch?
Fucking sweet, man. I mean, that might cause a problem. Like, if one of your fucking coworkers saw that shit, like, it, that kind of puts a damper on things. Like, if you're just a spectator in a large arena like that, yet one of your boys was just all, dude, I was fucking cranking one, and I came across this video, and you're in it. Like, that, like, hits home. Like nobody's business.
Yeah,
like,
what if he started cranking harder because of that? Oh, I don't want to know.
You don't even want to know. I mean, that shit's crazy. Like, yeah, you know, like there's a lot of people out there that, you know, have dabbled in, like, hey, we'll fuck around at home. Like, you get your own little thing that you do at home. Maybe you and your significant other want to, you know, film it and, you know, watch it later or something like that. That's one thing. But like actual production porn, when you could go to work and one of your buddies is like, oh yeah, dude, I, out of all the porn on the internet, like, one of your buddies is like,
that's
oh,
what
hey.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
He was someone else that same week said they saw me with some guy that I met, you know, like one time or two time working with. He's like, oh yeah, now I remember. I saw you in the video. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh my God.
That's crazy.
This is a trip. This is crazy. Yeah. Like of all the porn out there, they happened to see the one I was in.
Yeah,
it's weird.
That's awkward, man. Fuck, that makes me wonder how many porns I'm in.
So JR, what year is the majority of your porn?
I'd say like it's trailing through. It's like 3-4 years, 5 years, probably like 5 years is like the 5 years back is the average age.
Oh. I would think you'd have like all 70s porn. Okay, so I'm completely wrong.
Yeah.
I like certain eras for certain different reasons.
I have to ask you some questions about editing, Marcel, like how to like take out noise when you edit together certain videos, like how to take out the background noise with the audio at least. Like,
is also, can you, I mean, like, do you have any way to add hair? Any way to add hair in your video editing experience?
I mean, that I just think it's like an obvious question for a man to ask himself. What does it sound like for 1,000 women to have an orgasm at once? But when you have like you have to have your audio technique to like filter out the because otherwise like the background noise builds up and it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
I mean, if you have that like, layers of audio, you're not going to hear anything anyway.
Well,
yeah, it'll
like combine together as in a chorus. Or what will it do? Who knows? That's the whole point.
What you're really looking for is like people orgasming in a round. Really. Because like...
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as you start layering so much audio on top of each other, you're just going to hear like white noise almost. It's not,
right.
You're not going to have
no.
anything.
Right, but if you can do it, if you can do it like, well, yeah.
You have to curate it. You have to like sync them up at the point of orgasm. You can't
like
sync them up by time stamp. You have to sync them up by orgasm stamp.
And how many do you want? Like 100 going off at once, basically, and then
at least 100.
Yeah, you're way overshooting the mark here, man. That's way too many layers of audio.
You could do 8 tracks and then export it as 8 tracks and then put that out there and do another 8 tracks.
Now, I guess the point
I mean,
is,
I've
like,
already
are
done
you
30
try-
tracks over here and it sounds fine.
What I'm getting at is, are you trying to do like 100 different women's orgasms at the same time or just 100?
Yeah, it's maybe,
right.
It's possible.
I think I may need to hear your concept first so I can grasp exactly what you're looking for.
I learned a lot more about JR's free time.
I do want to say that, like, I was not disappointed. Like, we had a great magic conversation earlier, but I thought we were, like, I don't know, towards the tail end of the cast. And, like, this is what always amazes me about heavy meta. It's this kind of shit can happen. And like, I feel like we've got like plenty more content to go. Like, it turns into this.
I got about 15 minutes. I gotta go to the grocery store, but we can jam in more questions. We're on such a rich topic, and we have such an expert.
This is important, though. Like, I don't know if we need to go on to any more questions before we've like completely hashed this out.
I agree. Why? Yeah. Why? It's all about quality instead of quantity,
right? Over quantity.
I would love to stay on a million hours, especially with Marcel, but it is like 10:45 and we started like how many hours ago?
Guys, this is like a 3-hour cast for you guys, yeah.
It's like 7:30.
You may have to tie it up. So I heard that you know, they no longer do porn in California, but they still do porn down there in San Diego. What do you guys say about that?
I say that California state law has really changed the pornographic industry in a negative fashion, taking away jobs from a lot of people in that area, some of which I know.
They took our jobs!
If I was in that area, I'd be pretty mad at voters, and I'd probably be pretty mad at voters in the second largest city in California, because they were probably a large contingent of the people that were voting against it. I'm not really sure where they're from. Kevin, do you know where that is?
San Diego. Go, San Diego! I hope that's the second largest city of the contingent you were talking about.
Yeah, it is.
He would know. I think JR has the most angry about, though.
What?